Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City of Arroyo Grande. This is our council meeting, and this is Tuesday, July the 8th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Barnidge.
Here.
Councilmember Brown.
Yes.
Councilmember Costello.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie.
Here.
Mayor Farrar.
Here. Item 3 is our flag salute, and we're very pleased to have David Lohman here from Toastmasters. And David's going to lead us in the flag salute. If you would, please remain standing after the flag salute for our invocation. Mr. Lee Baggett is here from Baha'i Faith to do our invocation this evening. If you would, please stand.
Recite along with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
O thou kind Lord, these are thy servants who have gathered in this meeting, have turned unto the kingdom, and are in need of thy bestowal and blessings. O God, we are as plants, and thy bounty is as the rain. Refresh and cause these plants to grow through thy bestowal. We are ignorant, make us wise. We are material, endow us with spirit. We are needy, enrich and bless us from thy boundless treasury. Thou art mighty, thou art powerful, thou art the giver, and thou art the ever bounteous.
Thanks very much, Lee. We appreciate you being here and doing our invocation this evening. And David, don't rush off. I'm not sure if they told you, but if you do the flag salute, there's an additional, I won't call it an obligation, but it's an information piece, if you would. We get to hear a lot about what Toastmasters is doing.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, fellow councilmen, staff, and all of you guests. I've given so many speeches in this room, but the lecture has always been turned this way, so I just want to fix it right now so I can be back to where I'm used to doing this, and I don't know who to address, so I'm going to talk to everybody here. Toastmasters is an organization where we teach you public speaking skills and leadership, the most important thing that you can learn to do to help yourself in your business and your relationships is the ability to communicate well and effectively, and Toastmasters teaches you how to do that. We meet every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock right here in this room.
Item 5B, move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So move.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Item 6 is special presentations. We have none this evening. Item 7 is community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward with any comments or observations or suggestions on items that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any action on matters not published on the agenda. We would ask that you keep your comments brief, 3 minutes or less. Once again, items not on the agenda tonight. Anyone who would like to come forward, community comments and suggestions. Anyone? This is your opportunity. If you would, please come right up, sir. Just get your name for the record. It would be good.
My name is Leland Simpson, and I'm the owner of 234 Taxi in Grover Beach. And I know you have taxi business on the agenda, but I have kids at home. I need to get home. Sammy Orr is the finest gentleman who has ever been associated with my company. I've been in business 14 years, and I feel like a proud father watching a son graduate, watching him start his own cab company. But separate, I know that's on the agenda, so I don't want to talk anymore about that. There is an issue to the taxi cab industry right now, and it's called Uber. Your own city, Arroyo Grande City Code 5.72.010. I would like to talk to the city manager and the city attorney about this. It states clearly, taxi cab means a motorized propelled passenger carrying vehicle used for transportation of passengers who direct the route to be traveled over the streets and not operated over a fixed route. Uber is claiming themselves exempt from a certificate of convenience and necessity. And I would just love to bring to the attention of the city attorney and the city manager and the council that by definition, 5.72.010 requires that they have a certificate of convenience and necessity. They use the premise that a client calls Uber and Uber dispatches the call to to their drivers. That's no different than what me and Sammy is about to do. A client calls a dispatcher, and a dispatcher dispatches the call to a driver. It's a very simple code, 5.72.010. And the next code, 5.72.020, says that it's unlawful for them to operate. And I'm begging you guys to look into this, please. Maybe start a cease and desist. Whatever you can do, just please look at it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Anyone else? Once again, items not on the agenda tonight. Okay, we'll close community comments and suggestions, and we will move to the consent agenda. If you're following along, we're going to be addressing consent items 8A through 8P. We have a lot of consent items this evening. So this is normally a group of items that the council approves in one action, unless there is an item on the consent agenda that a member of the council would like to pull for further clarification, questions, or perhaps an independent action. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on any of the items that are on consent. So once again, if you're following along, we're addressing consent items 8A through 8P. And I'd like to invite members of the public, if any of you would like to come forward on any of those items. Once again, please be mindful of the 3-minute rule. Anyone? Okay, seeing no one, we'll close public comment on the consent agenda. And what is the will of the council this evening? Are there any items to pull? Okay, no items to pull. That being the case, I will entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8P, Paul.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, anything to read in there this evening, Tim?
Yes, indeed, Mayor Ferrara. Item 8G is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande adding Chapter 5.25 to Title 5 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code relating to state-issued cable television franchises.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion second. There is no discussion. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
It talks about the Municipal Code, Title 5, Chapter 572, has the determination criteria, as you can see there. And that criteria has five things: the demand for public of the public for additional taxicab service, the adequacy of the existing taxicab service, the financial responsibility experience of the applicant, the numbered make and type of equipment, color scheme, et cetera, to be used, and the effect an additional cab service would have on traffic congestion or parking. And after our permits person has looked into the issue, currently we believe Mr. Orr has set aside $10,000 in cash to ensure his cab is financially stable as a startup. You can see that his business is located in Napomo, and he plans to commence operations in our area. With the vehicle he currently has is a 2006 Scion, as you can see there, along with his fare and rate schedule. Should the council approve Mr. Orr's application, he'll be required to comply with the following conditions. He would have to submit his vehicles for inspection by the police department to ensure safety, supply evidence of his required insurance, and, of course, obtain a city business license. Additionally, he would have to obtain taxi driver permits from the police department for each and every one of his drivers. So with that, staff's recommendation is recommending that after conducting this hearing, that the council approve the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity and welcome a new taxi cab service to town.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Before we go to questions, the applicant here, and Mr. Orr, would you like to add anything to the staff report?
No, not really. Hi, everybody. I'm Sammy Orr. Thanks for being here. I just recently purchased Central Coast Taxi, and I've been a cab driver for 10 years, and I would greatly appreciate the opportunity to do business in Arroyo Grande. And if you have any questions.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay. You can go ahead and have a seat, and if we have questions, we'll call you back up.
Thank you.
All right. So any questions on the staff report?
I do.
Questions over here? Okay. Councilmember Brown.
Chief, can you tell me whether or not, based on the fact that he's probably going to be traveling throughout the county, whether he needs additional business permits or liability insurance from the county or any other cities he might be traveling in?
Well, I don't know what, off the top of my head, I don't know what Mr. Orr's plans are as far as providing taxi services in the other cities, but I can tell you the other cities do also permit taxis. And what we try to do is, quite frankly, share our information between the cities that will cooperate so that the applicant doesn't have to go through the same process over and over between the five cities area. So if his plans are to do business in those other areas, they usually do require that.
Very good. Thank you. That's all, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Very good. If there are no other questions, this
I have
is...
one quick question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Just wondering, I'm not really familiar with it, but what's the demand like in town for taxi service?
Well, currently we only operate one taxi cab service with the three vehicles, and I believe since definitely within the last 2 years, the activity in the village area with the opening of many new restaurants and has become much more vibrant, and although we accommodate people with parking, we always encourage people to utilize cab services if they need it, and so I think there is a need for additional cab service.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, now if there are no other questions, this is a public hearing. If there are members of the audience that would like to come forward on this public hearing, 9A, this would be your opportunity. Anyone? Okay. Seeing no one, we'll close the public hearing portion of 9A, and we'll bring it back to the council. We'll start with, on my left, with Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm ready to move forward with this tonight. I think that, as the chief stated, I think it's probably needed, and I think competition is always a good thing, and so I welcome this business to the city. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Brown.
I have nothing to add. I agree.
All right. And Councilmember Costello.
I'll support this tonight also.
All right. Mayor Pro Tem.
And I'm prepared to move forward as well.
All right. I'll make it unanimous. Welcome, Mr. Orr, and we hope. We know you'll be successful, so.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I'll move a resolution of the City Council of City of Arroyo Grande granting a certificate of public convenience and necessity to Central Coast Taxi for the operation of a taxi cab service within the city limits contingent upon full and total compliance with all conditions and requirements in Chapter 5.72, taxi cabs of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Primary residence is 410 feet from this particular project. So I'm going to be stepping down, and the Mayor Pro Tem will facilitate the discussion on this particular item.
We'll move forward with this item, and I'll turn it over to staff for the initial report.
Well, thank you, Mayor Pro Tem, members of the council. This is the first pre-application you'll be reviewing tonight, and it includes a specific plan amendment, a tentative tract map, and a conditional use permit for 42 single-family homes, one common area lot, and two commercial lots. So to orient ourselves a little bit, we are talking about the southwest corner of the Cortland Street and East Grand Avenue intersection. It's specifically at sub-area 3 of the Berry Garden specific plan area. Uh, The property is zoned gateway mixed use, and it does have the specific plan overlay. It is an integral part, again, of the Berry Garden specific plan. The surrounding land uses include various commercial developments to the north, east, and west, the People's Self-Help Housing Project immediately to the south, and the Berry Gardens residential development further south. Looking at the history of the site, I'll briefly summarize some of the past development proposals. In 1999, permits for an auto parts retailer were denied by the City Council due to conflicts with the use being in the and how it impacted the city's gateway. In 2002 and 2003, pre-applications like tonight's were reviewed, and land use permits were ultimately approved for a 9 homes to the west on the west-hand side of Strawberry Avenue. In 2005, a specific plan amendment was approved, which slated the remaining portions of subareas 3 and 4 for mixed-use development. In addition to this, the city also acquired the southern portion of the site to help facilitate affordable housing. In 2010, a mixed-use development was proposed with 58,000 square feet of commercial space, including a 51,000 square foot grocer anchor and the 36-unit apartment complex. The council did at that time express concern regarding traffic and traffic impacts, commercial setbacks of structures, parking, maximum building size, and inclusion of a bus turnout. And so a motion was made to return the item back to the Planning Commission for review of those items. At the end of 2010, the Planning Commission reviewed a revised commercial development proposal, which included 39,000 square feet, over 39,000 square feet, and one 39,000 square foot anchor tenant. And at that time, they recommended approval 4-0. The council did consider that project, but the item was continued at the request of the applicant and ultimately withdrawn. And in May of 2011, the City Council and the Planning Commission held a joint study session where the applicant presented 5 different development alternatives. However, there have been no formal applications since that time. The project site itself is 4.47 acres, again located in subarea 3 of the Berry Garden specific plan. The previous specific plan amendment designated subarea 3 as unplanned and required an additional amendment to the specific plan when development proposal came in. The applicant's currently seeking council input on what they're referring to as a mixed-use small town style development, which includes, again, the 42 single family homes and 10 to 12,000 square feet of commercial development in a horizontal mixed-use arrangement. Here we are taking a look at the site. So again, you have the commercial development up against East Grand Avenue with the western building a little bit larger than the eastern building. You have parking set to the side and behind the commercial development, as well as the single-family homes on the southern portion of the site, centered around a community green area. This is a conceptual image if you were standing in the middle of East Grand Avenue and Cortland Street intersection looking at the project. As you can see, the large massing kind of tower element with a false second story outdoor seating area and more of a consistent tall single-story development further down the street. Here is taking a look at one of the access points from East Grand Avenue and kind of the mini Paseo access point mixture. Again, you have very large single-story structures, corner entrances, and a mixture of different architectural materials such as wood siding, stucco, and brick. Here's a look from the interior of the project, looking at the community green, the neighborhood green area with the homes all centered around. Gazebo in the center, potential for a lot of pedestrian activity. And lastly, this is a top-down view of the home layout for the residences adjacent to the neighborhood green. It's kind of a twist on the zero-lot line building style. Typically, zero-lot line homes are placed directly on the lot line themselves. However, that creates some design conflicts, having openings and things right on property lines. So the applicant is kind of suggesting each property line would extend to the middle of this kind of patio area beside each home. However, the patio would only be accessible to one of the residences, and it would be under kind of an easement or CCNR, some type of CCNR. Looking at the commercial component a little bit closer, again, 10 to 12,000 square feet total. So the western building, about 6,250 square feet, give or take, and the eastern building, about 5,250 square feet. The commercial component covers about 1.07 acres of the site, and there is included pedestrian access between the residential component and the commercial component. And again, the large single-story structures, approximately 25 to 35 feet tall, and with the tower element at the east intersection. The residential component covers about 3.4 acres of the total site, with 42 single-family homes, roughly 1,600 to 2,000 square feet each. Two stories, 35-foot height maximum, and again, the homes around the green would have the zero lot line. The specific plan is required to implement and be consistent with the general plan. Staff is focused on three main general plan policies that we feel are most exemplify the intent of the GMU district and the intended development on the site. Staff believes that increasing the amount of commercial development to be at least consistent with the extent of commercial development across Cortland Street, as well as more intensified housing and different housing types, so apartments potentially over the commercial or attached residences, would be steps toward general plan consistently if a formal application were to come in. The design guidelines and standards for mixed-use districts, as well as the East Grand Avenue Enhancement Plan. Now, the East Grand Avenue Enhancement Plan was drafted and circulated, but it was never adopted, and so now it's used mostly just for guidance. These two documents provide site and building design requirements to help direct urban form and create active pedestrian and other multimodal friendly atmospheres. The conceptual project is extremely attractive. There's no doubt in that. And it does contain many features, particularly on the commercial component, that address these two documents. However, staff believes that a formal application should include additional elements to better reflect the two documents and the intent of that district, and as well as to be a better example of a development that could be replicated down East Avenue. These additional items include consistent two-story commercial buildings along and adjacent to East Grand Avenue, with the potential for the easternmost building to wrap the corner and come down Cortland a little bit. Expansion of commercial development on the site, again, to at least down Cortland, even with the development across the street, as well as expanded pedestrian access within the development and directly adjacent to the development. So enhanced crosswalks on East Grand Avenue in Cortland, multiple access points for residents and the neighboring neighborhood. With regard to environmental review, there is no environmental review required for a pre-application. However, any formal project that comes in would require environmental review consistent with CEQA. Additionally, there's no public hearing that's required for a pre-application review, but the agenda and staff report were posted at City Hall and on the city's website on Thursday, July 3rd. And that concludes staff's presentation. Obviously, I'll answer any questions I have, and I know that the applicant does have a presentation prepared as well.
Any questions for staff at this point?
I have a couple questions. Is there any sample of vertical mixed use within the city currently that we can look to? Most we talk about mixed use and then it ends up being horizontal mixed use versus vertical, and I think the intention, I think, was clearly to be vertical at some point. So that's my first question. Is there any other area within the city that we can look at and actually say that we've accomplished what we've set out to do, and that is vertical mixed use?
The most vertical mixed use that we see in the city is located near the Village, obviously with commercial retail activity on the bottom floor and office on the top floor. Further down at the corner of East Branch and Traffic Way, or West Branch and Traffic Way, there is, and on Traffic Way further down, there is a more residential on top, but those buildings are set back from the street a little bit more than what we intend.
So then I want to go back over a little history with the people self-help housing. We got a letter from a private citizen who describes that we didn't follow the general plan when we approved that. So I guess my question is, did we err in approving people self-help housing in there as a transitional housing source, or do you believe it falls within the general plan?
At the time that the People's Project was approved, the overall intent was that was the residential portion of the horizontal mixed use, with the remaining 4.47 acres to be commercial. So the transition between the commercial component and the Berry Gardens neighborhood was met with the People's Self-Help Housing Project. It does, obviously, with this proposal, it does look like there's a little bit of an error made, but with the intended overall site to be commercial, it does allow for that transition.
So basically, on the history that we intended, if there had been more commercial, you would have had horizontal mixed use versus, now it looks to me like we're going from single family housing to multi-residential with people self-help back down to single family housing. That doesn't seem like you're hopscotching. It doesn't seem like you're being consistent in terms of, not you, I'm not, when I say that I mean us, in terms of following the general plan. So Teresa, or if one of you guys could comment on that, I'd appreciate it.
I would be in agreement with that statement. It was certainly envisioned, as Matt described, that you would have a commercial component, a multifamily component, transitioning to a single family component in the existing Berry Gardens. And that's the project as envisioned at the time of the approval of the People's Self-Help Project. So that's and was very much part of the setting in which that project was approved.
Okay, great. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Matt, can you do you know specifically what the detail is between, and I didn't think about this till right now, between the commercial and the residential? I mean, I can see, I can sort of see what it looks like, but is it completely open? Do you know?
It would obviously be heavily landscaped. I can only, the applicant could probably better address it, but I would assume that there would be fences lining the residences with the kind of blocking those from the pathway, but with heavy landscaping in a pathway.
Okay, I'll ask the applicant. And then let me ask the million-dollar question. So I think that we'd love to see a big, vibrant, commercial, lots of tax coming into the city commercial project on this lot. And I think that we'd love to have a developer that does commercial development and is doing a good job all over the county do that. But since the project's been sitting there vacant and we haven't had anybody that looks like they want to put a big commercial building there, as far as there's no tenant that we can secure, how realistic is it to keep holding this property hostage for a tenant? Because I would love to see a big, square footage of a big tenant, not the food for less, but something Old Navy, Michaels. I've mentioned a million things to the applicant. but he's tried, and I truly think he really has tried. So in going back to what we envision, when do we finally, what we envision that's there, is that still realistic in this day and age with the economy and with the online presence of stores that might go there?
Certainly in terms of what's realistic in the commercial development realm, we have a very well-versed applicant coming before you, and I'm sure armed with very, very good information. I would just suggest that we are, as we prepared this report, and in answer to your question, we're being mindful of balancing the short-term economic gains related to a site with the community's long-term strategic goals. And in that, market trends are there, market conditions are changing. We've had before you commercial developments only a couple years ago, and we have projects in place to help assist in economic activity and growth on that corridor, specifically as relates to the East Grand Avenue Master Plan, and we're very anxious to bring those forward to you. But this evening you have a proposal forthcoming, and I just feel that obviously we have to flesh out the consistency issues with those long-term goals with a site being proposed. And Steve, you might want to add something.
Yeah, the only thing I want to add, Teresa covered it perfectly, but I just wanted to emphasize on the East Grand Avenue Enhancement Plan that we propose to come forward here within just a few months, there will be an economic analysis component to that. So one of the specific purposes of that project will be to identify opportunities, but also the economic feasibility of those alternatives. So up to now, we have to just go by, the applicant's analysis, but that project's going to give us a much better feel about what's possible in these areas and how we can best plan to come up with what closest meets our policies based on what's economically feasible.
So then when we envisioned commercial there, how did we come up with, it's a big parcel, it's on Grand Avenue. How did we come up with what we would like to see there? Did we study other cities, or how did, is that just because it's on Grand Avenue, it's commercial, it's a big lot? I mean, how did we come up with that?
Well, in terms of what's envisioned there, certainly we don't have anything on paper describing the project, a project that we're looking for. And you well know that you've seen many different configurations of projects. I would just say it is, when we were before you and changed the zoning in the early 2000s to implement policies in the general plan 2001 update, the mixed use change at that time was from a commercial corridor. Mm-hmm. So we were encouraging housing to be intensified, multifamily and mixed use housing formats to bring housing into the corridor. It's very important in terms of economic development. The general plan does include a land use policy, land use policy 5.10.1, regardless, it is specifically speaking to the particular property in that it is a gateway property, and it was a large enough property to really provide an example and a catalyst for revitalizing the East Grand Avenue corridor as a whole. And so that's what was, because it was a gateway property, because it was a sizable
size, yeah,
and it was vacant.
Okay.
Certainly it was the best opportunity.
That's what I wanted, was sort of the gateway and the size of it and such was what we kind of envisioned for there. Go ahead, Steve.
And just the other kind of policy-related point I wanted to make is when we also when we did the general plan update, as Teresa mentioned, and that entire commercial area was changed to mixed use, there was quite a bit of discussion, and we had actually described it as an economic development tool at the time. If you recall, the residential development was very profitable at the time. Commercial wasn't. So by making it mixed use, the idea was to encourage more quality commercial development on a portion of the property by allowing developers to develop the rear portions of the property, which were much less conducive to commercial, to help kind of subsidize the commercial. So the intent was to provide an incentive for more commercial. The intent was not for the residential development to consume the majority of the property there. So.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. I just have one quick question. Can you put up it's from the staff report that has a satellite aerial. Do you have that? Yeah, this. Okay, the one I have is a little bit bigger. I'm wondering if you know on the property across Grand Avenue where we had the senior housing and then the bank and the retail section built there, do you know the square footage of offhand? I did it on Google, but I've learned that's not a real accurate way to measure.
I don't know that square footage offhand. I would have to look into that further.
Okay. And on the CVS station, I'm remembering that as being the total being about 25,000. Is that?
That seems a little high, maybe just under, but we'll see if we can find that information.
25,000. Just trying to get a comp of what's on the corners. All right. Thank you. Okay. So at this point, I'll open this up as a public hearing, and I'll start with the applicant and the applicant's representative.
Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem and council members. So I'm Debbie Rudd with RM Design Group. Myself and Scott Martin, the architect, we're going to give you a short presentation. And is there a remote? So I thought it would be helpful to start with our goals for this project. One of our goals is really to create viable commercial and a location for viable commercial and to create a mixed-use project where we have a mixed-use project that has residential and commercial that complements the existing Berry Gardens neighborhood. So we address some of the concerns from the previous projects with the existing neighborhood. We want to bring the buildings and the commercial buildings up to Grand Avenue so we really create that gateway that the general plan targets and provide mid to high-density housing, workforce housing, so we can complete this need or meet this need. And then finally, strengthening and pedestrian and bicycle connections. I'm going to skip over the ones that Matt has already looked at. This is a contextual look at the site plan. You see the different how big our buildings are compared to the buildings in the area with the commercial up at Grand Avenue and the residential behind it. And I just wanted to talk a little bit more about your discussion about viable commercial. One of the things I see often in communities is we try to get so much commercial, we end up diluting it, and we don't get strong, economically viable commercial, and we end up with vacancies. So one of our goals here is really to concentrate the commercial at Grand Avenue, where we want to make the biggest bang for your buck right at Grand Avenue and make that a really strong, good example. We want to avoid creating underutilized and underperforming commercial. And I highlighted this is the site on the other side of, so this is Cortland. So this is the site on the other side with the CVS and the building in the back. And we want to bring the commercial buildings up to Grand so that we don't have that problem with not getting tenants in the back and having vacancies. And we also want another thing that we do by just having less commercial than what was previously proposed, as we're able to bring that commercial up to grade at Grand Avenue, so we can have plazas and outdoor seating right at Grand, and there's not the grade difference because that site does slope down when you move away from Grand Avenue. This is what we're trying to avoid. We don't want to end up with a site that has a lot of commercial, but it's vacant commercial, and it's not really adding anything to your tax base or to the neighborhood. This is, the adjacent property. This shows kind of in land use form the commercial along Grand, the higher mixed use density, residential density in the yellow, and then the large park component in the middle.
Let's see if I can figure this out. Thank you, council members, staff. This is an enlargement of the actual commercial portions of the site plan. Really focusing on quality street presence along Grand Avenue, understanding that this is not only the threshold to the project, but the threshold to the city. So to make a true gateway statement, we felt was very appropriate. Providing ways to engage the street, to penetrate the street into the site, to bring people in, tuck parking behind so it's well hidden, and still the opportunity for outdoor plazas, for connectivity to Grand Avenue, so the pedestrian is engaged as much as possible. Just a quick comparison, we're about 12,000 square feet in our square footage footprint of what we're showing. I know there's been a lot of talk of what's right, how much, how little. Just to compare what's directly across Cortland, the red box highlighted, that is where Starbucks and Subway are housed. It's about 3,500. So we're 12,000 square feet. In one of the two buildings, we could accommodate three Starbucks, a Jamba Juice, and still have another building to fill. So sometimes it's hard to really get a good idea of how much commercial can fit in a square footage. Those don't always jive with what we're thinking, but that gives you a little bit better idea of what can potentially be accommodated. On this site plan, I just want to note the black arrows. It helps orient you on the next couple of slides that are starting to show some of the architectural elements we're proposing. Again, from the corner, really trying to create a great pedestrian environment and a great vehicular threshold. We know that Grand Avenue is heavily traveled, bicycles, pedestrians, and vehicles. We want to address all of them, and we want to make a statement, and we want to say this is an important project. So that there is at least a two-story volume on portions, a one-and-a-half-story on others. It is a tall parapet, a tall roof. I think it provides that quality threshold gateway feeling. There's opportunity for plazas in the site plan and even a public art opportunity, which I think could be great. This is the intermediate paseo. Vehicle access is taken through here, the two commercial buildings flanking them. Again, a story and a half volume, get some nice height to have a quality street presence that frames not only the project, but also gives you an opportunity to block some of the wind so you can create really usable, viable outdoor space as well. This leads directly into the residential project behind. That is that true connectivity. For this to be a true horizontal mixed-use project, you need that pedestrian connectivity. You need people to be able to circulate from one to the other.
So I wanted to look at the density a little closer. Right now, our density is, for the detached townhomes, 12-plus dwelling units per acre. A typical townhome, and in your code, is 9 dwelling units per acre, so it's a little denser than what you might typically see for townhomes. But if you take out the park, the neighborhood green in the center, it goes up to 13.5 dwelling units per acre. So it's pretty dense. But I did a few things I wanted to show you. If you take a look at the existing Berry Gardens, where I put the red box, that's three typical Berry Gardens residences or lots down here. And you compare that to three lots up in this development, you get an idea of size comparison, because I think our graphics don't really show how small and dense this project really is. And then if you take that same bottom box and you move it up over ours, For three lots that you get in Berry Gardens, you're getting nine lots in this. That gives you an idea of that this is actually a pretty dense project, denser than I think our graphic. I think our graphic didn't do it justice that that we submitted to be a part of this. When you take those two down and you look at Berry Gardens, these are the three lots. These are Cortland. Those are at the exact same scale. So you can really see that this is a smaller lots, smaller houses, and a lot denser project than what you have in the area. We did also get asked about another example in it's called Marsh Street Commons in San Luis Obispo, and people were asking, what about doing something like that in this area? So we took a look at it. This is Marsh Street Commons. This is the commercial at the front, and then these are the residences behind, and you can see that it's a very similar size resident. It's also detached townhomes. They're not attached here in the back. And you look at the square footages, they're also relatively the same size as the units that we're suggesting, and the commercial is less commercial than what we're suggesting. This is a commercial view of that same project, and so this much commercial, I added that because to me that looks like a lot of commercial. It looks like more than what we have, but in actuality, that's only 8,590 square feet of commercial. We're suggesting 12,000. So we may need to do a better job of kind of illustrating that, but it gives you an idea of the amount of commercial that we're showing. I also wanted to touch on economic development and the workforce housing component. I'm really excited about the product type because I do think that it's a need that we have in our community right now. The EBC recently did a housing survey, and in that housing survey, it showed that 27% of employees will likely leave our county due to housing costs and cost of living. And that's a big impact on a company like ours if 20% of our people left, and it's a big impact on the economy and economics of a community. 97% of these employees prefer single-family detached homes. Kind of surprised me, but I think that this product does a nice job of bridging that need for single-family detached homes combined with the need for density that we're trying to get with these with this product.
I think that's a great point, Debbie. And I hear the idea of transitional housing. I hope that helps to demonstrate that this is by no means matching Berry Gardens or what you have there. This is a very unique sort of new twist on what higher density housing can actually look like and feel like and the type of great community spaces that can be created. When you look at the overall density, we're at 12. Part of that is because there's a sense of place. There's a quality space right in the heart of the project, something identifiable, something that all of the residents can engage with, have a community space. We're calling it the neighborhood green, for lack of a better term right now. There's front doors facing that. We envision some picnic areas. It's a place where you can really gather and really have community space. Not only that, it is sort of the visual access from the commercial development. So there's a pedestrian path. There's clear, strong visual connection to help that horizontal mixed use component. We're also proposing front porches and front doors along Cortland. Here's a sketch of what that may look like. Similar to the People's Project, even though there's a lot of depth to the site, you want to make sure you're addressing the front of the site, and that is Cortland for the residential. So this gives you a little bit better idea of, while they are detached, where they are meeting a unique market demand, there's not wide yards and 7,000 square foot lots. These are a new way to look at detached housing. This shows that center green space a little bit better. Again, the idea of eyes on the neighborhood, engaging pedestrian activity, walking to the commercial to grab coffee and walking back to sit outside and enjoy it with your family at what we think can be a really quality space. So we're here with our team to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. One question I have for you is, why did you design the commercial buildings to be a faux second story. Why don't I go ahead and put a second story on it?
Per the developer, that what we have heard again and again is it ends up being almost unleasable in today's market. The lease rate of what you can get up above, it makes more sense to actually build the shell and not put anything up there than to accommodate the space. But we know that the presence along the street, the threshold into the city, is still very important, so the volume still felt needed and essential, if you will.
And is there no consideration of making that into residential up there? Maybe you can't lease it out as commercial, but how about residential? That's what we've been talking about for a while, is getting the vertical mixed use.
I don't want to say there's no consideration of anything. something's always on the table, but again, this is sort of what we've heard.
Good evening. I'll cut in. On the second floor residential or the second floor office, it can be done, and it can be made. There are trade-offs that come with it, and what I asked RM to do, and I think they did a nice job, was to focus on trying to make sure that the commercial that we end up with is the best commercial that is on Grand Avenue. And I said, let's make it the best thing that we can possibly come up with, kind of up and down the street, whether it's, you know, Grand Avenue and all the way through Branch Street here in town. To do that, if you look at the elevations, I mean, some of those get as high as 35 feet. So it's there's room for two floors and a mezzanine. When we add more on the second floor, it detracts from the quality of the tenant on the downstairs to some extent, with some exceptions in that location. If that was transferred to the village and it was here, that wouldn't be the case at all. If it was in the village and we had and we retail down below, residential, office, whatever, the retail would be the same. The economics of that would be the same. It would be better because you would be getting some value out of the second floor. It's very similar in San Luis Obispo to Broad Street. If you go out Broad and you get between, say, Tank Farm, and you're going back into town and you look at mixed-use developments that have been done there, they have a tendency to migrate over time as going as mixed-use residential. Then that doesn't work, and then eventually, and if they either are vacant for too long, they convert to office. It to some extent would affect the tenant down below that. In this case, I want to do something that's really, really unique. I have shared with both RRM and with Mangano's and stuff that if the determination of staff and city said, you just got to have second floor in that and it's going to be a vertical deal up front, so be it. We will make that work. I kind of got on my hands and knees and said, at least save the corner on Cortland and Grand so I can try to get a real snazzy tenant, because I'd like to be able to bring in the best possible, whether it's a national type restaurant or whatever it is, and putting that second floor right up front would kind of lower my odds of getting that pulled off. As you go west and somebody says, you know, let's go up, even if it's a portion of that building, that we can do. And if that's what, and we can do it as residential, we can do it as office. I actually would probably prefer to do it as residential under that scenario, because it probably would have a little bit of less impact on September. So that's kind of my short answer.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Not right now.
questions of the applicant? Not right now, I guess.
Well, this part, I just had one of the things that came up in the last consideration was, in fact, the bus stop. And based on the circulation here, it doesn't look like a bus stop is possible. Is that something you guys can fit in there? It was.
We're meeting as we speak with RTA to discuss where they would like their bus stop. Currently, there's a bus stop just a half a block away on the same side of the street in Grover. And so whether they want to put the bus stop there or in front of this building, either way, it works for us.
Is that as in a bus stop, is it a what I'll call a pull-out section, or is it?
The city has told us that they would like to see a pull-out.
But is that what exists already?
No. Okay. Right now, it's not a pull-out. It's just a little stop.
Nick, can I ask you a couple questions? So the residential upstairs versus the commercial upstairs, what do you think would be easier to fill?
You know, there always seems to be a need for housing. So I guess I would say that the housing would be probably easier. I would say, and this sounds kind of weird, but the building that is to the east, that would probably be a better bet to have office above, because it's less invasive on whatever's going downstairs. And in case we had some really snazzy Italian restaurant, mm-hmm. Italian's probably not a good example, but it has a fair amount of, you know, mm-hmm. aromatic things that are coming out of it. Mm-hmm. It's easier to deal with that within an office environment than it is to deal with a residential environment. Correspondingly, it's also easier if, you know, it's noisy at night and people are having a drink downstairs, whatever, if the residential guys are upstairs. It's just easier to deal with it on an office thing. On the west side, which I actually don't think will probably be, although we don't have any tenants for any of it, but on the west side, I don't suspect that will be heavily restaurant or food service use. It probably doesn't matter, and I think we'd be okay. I actually think residential would probably be better on that side, so I could see it going both ways depending on the building.
Okay. And then is there anybody else that's going to make a presentation or on your project, or is this?
I was going to say a little bit, but
okay.
Are you done?
We're done. It's just you.
I just have a question, maybe, unless you're going to go over it. But you had told me what you've gone through as far as, I think you went to San Diego to try to secure commercial tenants, and I'd never heard of anything like that. So if you're going to, will you expand on that when you give your presentation, or if you can talk
sure.
about it now, whichever.
No, I can go through kind of a quick presentation, and I was actually going to toss my notes. I think I know this project so well and have been at it so long that it's kind of imprinted permanently, I think. Thank you for taking the time. I also want to thank Teresa and Matt for sending out kind of an update on kind of all the things that the history. And I say, you know, the history is kind of long and storied, but it's behind us. So I did want to say that, you know, we are commercial developers. We don't do residential. We never purchased this with the intent of doing commercial, and effectively have gotten to this point because after multiple years and multiple other projects going on in the surrounding area, it's become completely clear to me that for the next 10 plus years, I don't believe there is any chance of what I would call viable commercial development. That viable was the word I kind of asked, because there is that market in that location will not support it for a variety of reasons, which I can go through later or whatever we'd like. We are very active in the commercial market today, and because of that, are talking to multiple tenants every day. We currently in San Luis Obispo County, well, actually San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara County, have almost, not quite, but almost 500,000 feet of commercial projects that we are building, remodeling, or entitling. Of that 500,000 square feet, we are short about 30,000 feet of LOIs or leases in process to fill all of that. On Cortland, we don't have any tenant. We don't even have a tenant for what we're proposing to build, but I just feel like we have to do something. And it's for a variety of reasons. You know, we went into this wanting to do a commercial project there, as you know. But things have changed in the marketplace. They've changed locally. But more importantly, they've changed from macro level, which is the reason, if it was a local deal alone, time could fix it. And I think, you know, and although my father always said, hope is not a strategy. If it was just, oh gosh, you know, this guy next door, when he gets filled up, it's going to be fine. There's a new residential subdivision, and that's going to bring in enough new people, and tourism is going up enough that there's enough demand, we could probably figure out how to do that. I'd say pause, let's wait. But that's not the case. And so we have a situation on that intersection where we have the lowest traffic signalized intersection on Grand Avenue. So if you go to Halcyon and Grand, it's a busy, busy corner. That could command some commercial, national commercial tenants. Elm and Grand to a slightly lesser extent, but it has the ability with Elm Street to get the traffic counts that will support some national tenants going into that location. In addition, it has the benefit of, which never used to be a benefit, but it is today in the marketplace, of second-generation space, whereas new space costs roughly, by the time you're all through with tenant improvements, a little bit over $300 a foot. You're dealing on second-generation space at about $140, $150 a foot. So there's a significant difference in what can be done there. If you move down, the next one we get down to ours at Cortland and Grand. It's a good location. It's a good location on Grand. But the entire focus and the way that was designed was actually not to encourage traffic, but to limit traffic going into the Berry Gardens for a lot of obvious reasons. Candidly, I looked past that when we bought this, and it was a mistake on my part. There was a window of time when we could have made it work. That is gone. And then if you go down further, you've got Oak Park, which also is, you know, significantly more traffic, and even further, to a lesser extent, Fourth. And I wouldn't want to bet a lot of money on Fourth, but I think on Oak Park, there's actually, you know, people could look at that and say, gosh, could you, you know, over the next 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years, do some development there if you had a big empty space? Probably so. But in this location, we don't have the ability to do that. So we have been able to, over the last 18 months, put together 460 or 70,000 feet of letters of interest and leases with retail tenants. We were not able to get anything going on Cortland. I candidly was a little bit burned up thinking that maybe we had the wrong leasing group. These guys have been through a bunch of projects, they failed, they get paid on commissions, and they're like, you know what, maybe we're not giving the effort. So we brought in a new group, tied it together with a different project that we have up in the Bay Area, and said, let's go down, put this down at an ICSC conference, go down there, focus an effort, put a booth together, and let's just go through and see what we can come back with. Because with the fresh faces, fresh eyes, new site plans, we came back with a little bit in Northern California, not great, but we came back with enough that we got it, so it worked. And we came away with goose eggs on Cortland. So it didn't work. I want to make sure that what we do is something that's viable, and that we don't build something that is vacant, because it sucks the energy out of the good space. If we built beautiful stuff in front, we got a good tenant, and their neighbor buildings are all empty, it sucks the life out of the front. And those people don't do as well. Yes, you get extra parking. Yes, you know, they get the benefit of having all the vacancies in the back, but it doesn't work. It just doesn't. It doesn't benefit the overall project. So I think from my perspective, that was kind of. Let me look through my notes and see if I missed anything. I think that's it. I think the one other thing that I will say, and that we had always focused on grocery-anchored centers because there was opportunities locally for a period of time with grocery-anchored centers in this market. That has also changed, and it's going to continue to evolve and only get more competitive and less desirable to use that. Soft good retailers, the Old Navies and everybody else, will require to be in a regional spot. So in this area, if they're going to go here, they're going to go on the freeway or they're not going to go at all. They also are fighting kind of a battle for their lives a little bit in that their store sizes are getting smaller because they have to, because they're being cannibalized by Amazon and direct sales, even some of their own online stuff, which effectively cuts the need for square feet. And in what they would see, this is technically called a micro market, they have to have the freeway traffic to be able to draw them in. So we have gone... I don't really know how many tenants. I noticed looking back at the old thing that we showed 250. I haven't updated it, but I'm guessing that we have talked to, I'm sure there's somebody we missed, but it's got to be darn near everybody in the retail business, because when we've approached them on other projects, we always have Cortland as part of that project. And we've got so many site plans for Cortland, we can almost give them anything they want because we've done so many, you know, many tries. So that's it. So I think that's it.
Any other questions for the applicant?
Nick, I talked to you earlier today, and I hear you now, and it just feels like you're telling me it's not going to get filled at all.
The 10,000 feet in the front, or 12,000 feet in the front?
Yeah.
Well, I will say this. We don't have a tenant at all for it now. I believe in this case that is not an appropriate place to put residential on the street front. Plus, I don't think it ever get approved, but I also don't think it's appropriate. I do think that if we can make this building spectacular enough with enough outdoor amenities where it's indoor, outdoor, and where you can walk. And, you know, one of the great benefits that kind of goes, I mean, they brought it up a little bit. Debbie brought it up a little bit. But when we shrank this proposal, we were able to bring the buildings up. If you remember in the old deals in a bigger center, we actually had almost a 6-foot change in grade from the street down to the retail. So you had to kind of go down a windy path. Mm-hmm. This brings everything up. It kind of makes it more substantial. And I think the corner building on the Cortland side with two patios, if we can't get leasing guys to get that thing leased up, something's wrong. But I mean, it's going to be a challenge. It's not going to be big rents. It's not going to be in this. But I think we can get some. As you go west, it's going to be a tougher sled, you know, sledding as you go to the next building to the west. But from my perspective, I'm fine to say, I'll put my skin in the game and say, let's try to make it work. So that it, you know, if we can make it work, we'll all benefit. It doesn't, okay, well, we'll eventually get it filled up, and maybe it'll be vacant for a little while, but we'll get it.
Okay, and then earlier I made the comment about kind of hopscotch development, where we went from, you know, the higher density, which was supposed to be transitional, now to a lower density, and your architects made the argument, well, it's still denser. I guess my question is, how is that consistent with the development that we did right behind it? It just doesn't seem consistent. And if you, it would seem to me, and maybe I'm wrong, but it would seem to me that if you had denser development closer to the street, you're going to have less issues with Berry Gardens because they're going to be closer to Grand Avenue.
If the residential development was denser?
Yeah.
I think what RM showed is, you know, and I'm not a housing guy at all. I have never built one other than the one we live in.
I know.
And I didn't like doing that. But that is a dense project, and it's also one that I think allows some of the environmental things that make it a lot more pleasing to live there rather than row houses, where if you get a row house, you're going to get light from two ends of the house and dark walls on two sides. This allows, albeit there's almost no yard, you've got light on all four sides, you've got a pleasing environment to kind of be within, and also a lot that's less than half the size of a conventional lot. This is a very compact, very dense project in something that I think also will be pleasing to the people that want to live there. And, you know, I don't know what the technical term would be, but for the young family that's got a job and looking for their first home, willing to live, maybe have one child, you know, somebody, it's a great fit. I think there's real trade-offs when you say I'm going away from that in that environment. I will say this: if that ground was moved into the village again, because the village is entirely different, I think that's the only kind you would build is row housing, where they put them with, you know, right up next to each other, because people would prefer that, I believe, here, where they won't there. And I know that may sound.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Questions? So this is not a public hearing, so I will open it up to the rest of the public and anyone else who'd like to speak at this point. All right. I wonder if there's going to be.
I'm not shy. Good evening, City Council, Mayor Pro Tem. My name is John Mack. I reside at 1501 Loganberry within the Berry Gardens subdivision. Last time this project was before you, actually had up a lot of the neighbors, probably 300-400 strong. And I'd like to talk about that a little bit. I did send out an email to a lot of the neighbors, did get a lot of response. Maybe some of them are even here tonight. They chatted and they said, we'll be there tonight. I hope they come up and talk as well. I like to commend the developer. He listened to us. He did. Whether we have general plan or a rewrite of general plan or rewrite of the Berry Gardens specific plan, I even designed a project on this several years before this one. Didn't even need to go before City Council and got unanimous approval at Planning Commission. Does this meet the needs and the cry of the neighbors? Yeah, we don't have the trucks. We don't have a big box store. We don't have a repeat of another grocery store or a drug store or something else that's already on a neighboring corner. What we had asked the developer to do was to provide some more mom-and-pop opportunities, some more retail commercial, and something that would really meet the needs of the community and Berry Gardens and not allow those semi-trucks come through our neighborhood. We already have traffic problems and issues regarding that. Is this the plan, the final plan? I don't think so. But it's a tremendous improvement. They got an architect on board that has brought us some options, beautiful options at that, and I think it's headed in the right direction. In terms of the ratios, I can talk to you as an architect now. There's one thing that wasn't said that is really hindering the development here, and that's the existing Blockbuster store on the left. It's a tremendous high parapet. It blocks view to the site. And I think that's part of the problem that the architect and developer have, is it's really not conducive to setting commercial way in on the project. The way it's designed now, I think it accomplishes that. It puts all the retail right on the street frontage, puts the parking in back. It says, here's Arroyo Grande. It says, here's the architecture. Here's some excitement and some opportunities. I love the outdoor patio on the corner, as opposed to what happened with Rite Aid, which was a misuse of open space, in my opinion. It has all the elements of pedestrian circulation. It has a residential component with an interior courtyard and green space, which, again, Berry Gardens would be concerned about because we don't necessarily want them traveling down into our park and using our park down in the inside. It provides its own private open space. In terms of the hopscotch effect, yeah, we did miss the opportunity of designing everything all together. Way back when, those six lots were developed with Route A, and then the residential component being the people's self-help housing. In the real world, I'd probably flip the two, but we can't go back in time. So where do we go from here? What do we do now that addresses the concerns of the neighbors and what's best for the community? And I think given all that, the developer has made some strides to that. I'd also offer some other commercial aspects because I do commercial development as well. It's really tough to lease buildings that are further back in the site. I think they've nailed it on the head in terms of the dimension of the bay. What's the best bay width is probably 40 to 60 feet deep on retail sales and offices. And to put a couple more buildings in back, you don't want to set those buildings too far back or you'll have exactly what Debbie had mentioned there and showed a slide of next to the UPS store. Vacant, vacant, vacant. They'll stay vacant because you're not up on the street. You don't have the street exposure. You don't want to pay those top rents for non-exposure. One thing I would add from an architect's standpoint is I do believe in the second story space. At the right rent, I'd probably rent one of those spaces. You will see ocean views from the top of that second floor going down Grand Avenue. There's a couple homes in Berry Gardens which you can see ocean views down Seabright, and they're just two-story homes. So there may be some missed opportunity and some more money to be had. I think I'm in support of more residential, to be honest with you. Thank you.
Anyone else would like to come forward and on this item?
As I look at this design, I remember last time we were here about this, and I wonder about the trash trucks and picking up garbage. They're back in the back by residential again, so I do think that they're going to deal with some noise. And the lots are so small, and I'm a dog owner. The first thing that comes to my mind, where do they put the dogs if these families want dogs and stuff? Just the two things that stood out in my mind to it, and I think it's getting better. I'm not sure we're there yet, however. Thank you.
Just real quickly, name and address for the record. Sorry.
Patty Welsh, Pradera Court, Arroyo Grande.
Thank you, Patty. Come on up.
I was looking. I thought she had her hand up.
No.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Michael Morrow of 1499 Raspberry in the Berry Gardens development. Nick Tompkins has spent a lot of time trying to develop that and, you know, make some money, I'm sure. But also, I've never seen a developer work harder than him to communicate to a neighborhood. And we're not even, you know, right up against where he's developing. But he came and sat at our kitchen table and listened to all our concerns a couple of years ago. and he's continued to try to make it work. I'm really happy with what I'm seeing, and I think it will present Arroyo Grande well from the street. You know, if you go down from that part of Grand to East Branch, you know, that section, there aren't any really snazzy-looking frontage buildings along Grand. This is a great example of what we could do, you know, in more places along Grand. And we're pleased not to have such a big retail development that we have to deal with even more trucks. We're already kind of going crazy with all the trucks from the construction of the self-help, you know, the apartments, water trucks going back and forth, and, you know, cement trucks and everything else. So it would be really great to see all that calm down when the development's over and be back to a residential neighborhood the way we were designed. Anyway, we really have to thank Nick Tompkins for listening to us, and we would appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else on this item? Come on up.
Mayor Pro Tem, Council Members, Chris Richardson, 1213 Napomo Street. I just wanted to speak briefly and give you a perspective and touch on the density discussion, the vertical mixed use, and the marketplace as it relates to the residential component. I'm glad that Nick's not interested in building homes, because there probably wouldn't be any for us to he'd have all that market share too. But so I thought I'd touch on that, because he touched on the commercial. I have a unique perspective also. I lived in the product on Broad Street that was referenced, that Syntex built, kind of in between Tank Farm and Orchid, mixed use. There was a vertical component to that as well. And I now live in Marsh Street Commons and actually sold those homes to most of the people that live there. So I have a different perspective. This product type fits very well in the marketplace. There's a significant segment of the market that's looking for this type of product type, because they don't want to be in a condo. They're ready to buy. They're young family. They're growing. It's actually opens itself to a broad buyer profile as well, because sometimes you get people who are in the larger homes. They're tired of taking care of the yards and the property. So it would probably surprise us that it would appeal to a broad base from a buyer profile standpoint. So I think it meets a need in our county right now, as we saw with the EVC numbers. There's just not enough residential product out there and coming online. So this really is a type of product that's not in the marketplace, and I think it would really resonate within the market. So I think hats off to RRM and the applicant for what they've done here with essentially a zero lot line, but it doesn't really feel like that. It feels like more of a patio home. In regard to the vertical mixed use, with the project I mentioned on Broad Street, that vertical mixed-use component really struggled because it wasn't in the downtown core. And it just, the commercial component of it struggled, and the residential component struggled. A couple reasons are people really don't want that kind of product. And if they do, they want it in or very close to the downtowns. If they're not looking for that product, they want something with some space that has more of a single-family detached feel, with which this product does. And lastly, on that topic, that product's really hard to finance. Lenders are uncomfortable with it from a residential standpoint. So if you had residential for sale on the second floor, it's really challenging to sell, both because the demand in the marketplace is pretty lean and it's hard for buyers to finance. So I just kind of want to give you that perspective on the vertical mixed use and the residential market. I think you've got a great opportunity here with a great mix of uses that are viable within today's current conditions, both from the commercial standpoint and the residential. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to come forward on this item? All right, I'll go ahead and close the public hearing. I don't have the gavel here, and I'll open it back up for any more questions for staff from anyone up here.
I have one question to staff, actually. Steve, you and I met some time ago, in which you discussed a certain type of project there, and it seemed like you were a bit discouraged by the fact that the project they brought forward didn't really, you know, even come close to what was talked about. Can you describe that a little bit, the history of that whole discussion?
Sure. I mean, I think it pretty much mirrors the report that staff gave in terms of what staff's looking for. I think we had communicated that the city's top priority throughout this effort has been to try to get or attract commercial to the entire remainder of the site, since the People's Self-Help Housing Project really represented the mixed-use portion of the residential. From there, though, we have been sympathetic to some of the struggles of getting commercial in that area. And so we had a number of meetings with the owner, prior potential buyer, this potential buyer, and at least staff's suggestions and recommendations were to see if we indicated that the staff might support a transition to more residential if we could come up with a concept that better meets the policies that Matt laid out in terms of the general plan and specific plan for Grand Avenue, in trying to still have a better transition of land uses. So if we went from single family to the multifamily, then maybe some additional multifamily or some type of higher density, whether it be townhomes, whatnot, and then transition to commercial that could maybe be less commercial than we originally wanted to see, but a little more expanded commercial than they have there now. And we did take a field trip to look at the project on Marsh, which had a number of features that we felt, if modified, could be appropriate on Grand Avenue and we would support. And however, the project that came in didn't really, there's some similarities, but it doesn't really reflect the exact concept that was implemented there. So I think we're all, from staff standpoint, we've communicated that we'd be willing to try to sit down and compromise and come up with something that maybe meets all our needs. But we were trying to look for a residential component that was a little more creative, a little more urban feel that would fit in with that corridor and would be an approach that could be mirrored and encouraged in other parts of Grand Avenue in order to accomplish what we want to accomplish up and down that corridor.
Thank you. That's all.
Any other questions?
No.
All right, then I'll open it to comments, and actually, with the council's permission, I'd kind of like to go first on this. As I think most of you know, probably the biggest proponent of commercial on this location. And so my first reaction to this was that of course we wanted to preserve this corner for a really intense commercial project. And the reason I've always felt so strongly about commercial on this corner is not just because of the retail potential of it, but also because when you draw one of those circles and look at the number of homes that are close by this corner, this is a great residential or pedestrian as far as somebody being able to walk to it. When you look at the density, not just in Berry Gardens, but also over into Grover Beach behind Vaughn's there, and even going back onto Elm Street all the way to the park, you really have what is a in our community probably one of the densest areas in Arroyo Grande. So that was always my interest here, in that this would serve as many people as possible, and also provides as many services as possible without having to cross over the freeway. So as I said, my first reaction here was, you know, just no way to additional residential, let alone that we're now going to switch back to single family. And I listened to Mr. Tompkins and his concerns about not being able to find tenants, and told him, well, 3 years ago there was people lined up, and, you know, 3 years from now maybe they'll be lined up again. But I did do some due diligence here. I did talk to another commercial operator to get a second perspective, and in many ways confirmed exactly the things that Mr. Tompkins had told us, that when you're looking at developing a commercial center, particularly from scratch, the costs are significantly higher than repositioning one. And that you really do need, in order to make the what you're calling the mom-and-pop shops, or the shops work, you really do have to have an anchor tenant to make that sense. And the only anchor tenants you're going to find in a suburban location are either a drugstore or a grocer. There's no other major tenant, and unless you went to like a destination tenant, I'm going to say like Home Depot. I'm not really seriously suggesting that, but that kind of a destination where people would drive to that location. And I think it's pretty clear from the history of this corner that we would never permit that intensive development. I mean, you go back all the way to AutoZone, they're at least something of a destination retailer, and we rejected that. Food for Less was a destination retailer. We rejected that because of the intensity of use. The other thing that he confirmed here was that this corner is not as good a corner as either Elm Street or Halcyon or Oak Park because of the residential size street. Even though it's shown as a collector on our maps, it clearly is never going to carry the kind of traffic that these other streets are. And the last thing that he mentioned, really just kind of offhand, was that the one thing it had going for it was rooftops. That it is confirming my thought was that there are a lot of people close by. So in some ways, the additional residential really, I'm going to sort of stretch this a little bit and say that becomes the anchor tenant. That in fact it is the residential component of the entire area that makes it maybe possible that you can support these kind of shops. So I've kind of come around. I still kind of struggle with, you know, it is a transition back to single family. Yeah, it would be nice if we had done this earlier, that we would have done it backwards. I do think the reason that we always thought that Grand Avenue would support really significant commercial development all by itself is because of the kind of traffic. As I'm remembering, there's 20 to 25,000 traffic trips a day going through here. But I think, as we've seen, not that many of them necessarily are prepared to stop, are going to get off. I think if we look at the Applebee's project, you would have thought that was a slam dunk based on the traffic, but it turned out not to be. On the using residential, and I agree with staff that when we looked at this, five, 7 years ago, that there was a real concern that all of the commercial property, as soon as we went mixed use, that the residential demand was so high that it was going to wipe out all of the commercial potential. And that's what we were seeing. We were seeing projects coming through, I'm going to say similar to this, where really the commercial was a second thought. There was really a finding a way to develop the residential, and if you had to do commercial or you left some commercial in place, that was the kind of projects we were seeing. And I think maybe that's just the reality of the way that Grand Avenue is going to develop. I think as we look, you know, I do wish we had this study, but we don't this evening. But I do think as we look going forward that's actually going to be the way the rest of Grand Avenue develops. We are not, there's not any big lots left, but on top of that, I think we're going to see more residential development with residential serving small commercial, maybe the existing small commercial. Staff had also noticed that the idea was that the residential would subsidize the commercial, and here we did the residential, but we really what we did was subsidize affordable housing. You know, we put in the affordable housing project. I doubt that was a profit center for this project. That was contribution's the wrong word, but that was the one of the major components we were looking for. In fact, it's what we did across the street. We got a major affordable housing project and the senior housing project, basically split that the other way with two-thirds and a third. And in fact, I think that probably the commercial project on the opposite side of Grand Avenue, on the north side of Grand Avenue, is probably smaller square footage total than this is, than what's proposed here. So I think what I'm working around to is that I've kind of come around on this. I'm still hesitant about, you know, it is kind of a bad planning concept to go from single family to, you know, to really high density apartments to now single family again. And yeah, if we had to do it over again, it'd be great to flip it backwards. But we have to play the hand that we're dealt here. And so tentatively, I'm in favor of moving forward with this. I really would like to see some other thoughts on the residential. I understand that this is, you know, a unique, you know, design, and I did stop and look at the March project. I think it's maybe a little closer than staff says it is, but it just feels like maybe that's something we could take a little bit more of a look at. Can we see some higher density in there? Obviously, there's not going to be a room for a lot higher density, but maybe some higher density. And I am concerned about the bus stop, just my thing. If we're going to build this high-intensity node and then we have no public transportation in it, that's a concern for me. So finding a way that we could work the bus stop in it, yeah, I suspect that South County Transit is who you're actually going to end up talking to. Move the bus stop if that's what you want, but I do think if we've got the major bus stop on the other side of the street, we clearly want to reflect it on this side of the street. So somewhere between Oak Park and Cortland, we'll want to see some kind of a bus stop. I do those details. I agree with you. The trash is an issue, but it always is. But I'm sure that's going to be worked out because it needs to work for the shops as well as for the residential. So with those comments, yeah, I'm looking at this as something that's doable and something that I think will work here and maybe sets the tone going forward for how we either develop the rest of Grand Avenue, particularly between Elm and Halcyon. Until you get to the corner, we have very similar issues down in that area, and we will be looking for the repositioning of the existing shopping centers. In fact, we have the one at Elm already being repositioned as the way that we'll see major retail develop in the future. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Can we start with Joe?
Sure. Well, I also share some mixed feelings about this. I think it's a very attractive project the way it's presented. The only questions I have are is it right for the location? And I'm not really sure. I have to take the experts' opinions on what commercial development is going to be like in the immediate future. This is our last main developable commercial space in the city, and I kind of hate to see it go to such a small portion. So I'd like to see if I can maybe support this if we had a little more commercial to it, if there's some way to do that. And I understand and appreciate the fact that we have different levels in terms of the topography there. So if there's some way to increase the commercial somehow or other, I'd like to see that brought back. If we have to throw the bus stop in, I don't know whether that means moving the commercial buildings in or to the south 10 feet, then that moves everything 10 feet. Maybe we lose four of the units, and the residential portion is a little bit smaller. I like the concept of the somewhat condominium-esque feature here. And I think that's attractive. I don't know that I want to go to higher density in terms of turning this into apartment buildings, but I don't want to go to too high of a density here either. I do want to be somewhat cognizant of the impacts on traffic into Berry Gardens. So maybe this is about as dense as we can let it get. But I do come back to hopefully we find some way to put a little bit more commercial in here. I don't know whether that means putting second stories on the commercial buildings or one of the commercial buildings, but I'm beginning to resign myself to the issue that it's going to be very difficult to develop this as a more dense commercial property. We've seen over the past decade the options that have come forward did not work out. The Food for Less was just going to be too much of an impact on the neighborhood. I'm not sure what other kind of anchors we'd get in there into larger buildings. So that's something I'll ask you to wrestle with a bit as the developer on this. One of the issues I've been told is that it's going to be very difficult to put any more additional commercial in here because of the differences in the topography. Well, is it possible to put a little more fill in there so that we might be able to put commercial buildings close to the commercial buildings that are there without going too far back, but have them at the same level? And I don't know whether that's an engineering problem that's insurmountable or not, but I'm 50-50 on this. I like the project. I like the way it looks, but there's a part of me that still yearns for a little bit more commercial here, and I hate to give up the commercial aspect of it. So I'd ask that as this progresses along, maybe we can see that there is more commercial development in it. I think perhaps, when will that economic study be out, Steve? Trick question.
We're scoping it as part of our land use element, so we're getting the scope together. It will entail an RFP and getting somebody on board to conduct the study. We hope to get that going this summer, and we'll have to look at the RFPs before we can give a schedule.
Are we talking about a year, 2 years?
No, I don't believe so. I think the East Grand Avenue would be the first component, and that would be done, ideally by the end of the year.
Well, that may have an impact on what we see here also. As that study does come forward, it may well prove everything you're saying and point us in this direction. But a little more commercial, please.
Yeah. Thank you. First of all, Nick, you deserve kudos for, I don't know what, the umpteenth time you've been here on this project. So for that, I give you some sort of endurance award, I think. I struggle with a couple of things. It's revenue neutral. That's the biggest thing for me. We are running out of revenue-generating space in the city, and that this has always been like the gateway crown jewel, supposedly, in our dreams, what it could be. And obviously, economics and reality dampen that, but that's kind of what our original thought process was. The other thing is, it is truly hopscotch development, and it goes against everything I did on Planning Commission. It goes against everything in the general plan. It's clearly, it's just wrong in terms of what we're trying to do from a purely planning standpoint. It's poor planning. It just is. And everybody says, well, wish we could have done it earlier. Wish we would have thought about it and switched the component and made this the residential in the back and put the higher density in the front. Well, I can't deal with what could be. I have to deal with what is. And that still makes it, in my view, in a lot of ways, poor planning. I'm probably the minority here, quite honestly, on that issue. My sense of it is we got to ask ourselves a couple questions. And I don't have an answer. And you got to understand, Nick, I hate these pre-ops because people get the idea that, well, you said something at a pre-op, so you're either for a project or against it. And I want to be really clear that any comments I make, and I think most of the comments that any of the council make, are not opinions set in stone one way or the other. They're a way to try to move the project forward. So just hear my comments in that light. I would like to see more vertical mixed use, whether, like Nick said, on the west side maybe and not so much on the other corner. I'm not sure I buy the whole odor issue and the way he described it. I think there's ways to get that done and taken care of. I think you could make it a vibrant community if you had the right sort of businesses downstairs and people that wanted to walk to local businesses either for dinner or drinks or whatever it might be. So I'd like to see more vertical mixed use. And I can't believe I'm actually saying this, and Councilman Guthrie is just laughing at me, I'm sure, if he hears this, but I'm actually looking at this and wondering if it needs to be higher density. I'm usually the one that argues for lower density, but when you look at the project People Self-Help and you really look at it logically, I don't understand why we wouldn't continue that, because I honestly believe, given the circulation pattern that we could do, a lot of these people would be emptying out onto Grand Avenue and wouldn't go into Berry Gardens at all. It could be worked out that way. So I'm looking for planning that makes sense, and planning that makes sense to me means more commercial. Nick, I totally get your discussion today with me about putting commercial in the back. It just dies. I get that, and I agree with you based on your comments on that. But we've got to figure out some way to make it more vibrantly commercial we need to actually do what we talk about when we did the general plan and we did the mixed-use zoning and try to do some actual vertical mixed use. I think it's lack of vision and lack of desire that makes people go horizontal versus vertical, and I think we need to maybe make this a demonstration project to see what can actually be done. I've heard you say time and time again, we want to make this the best commercial space on Grand Avenue. Well, I would challenge you to do something more. I'd ask you to make it the best mixed-use project on Grand Avenue. That's my challenge to you. We're not here to design your project. That's not our job. Pre-apps are purely to, offer comment and ideas. I look forward to whatever comes forward. But again, I think I would like to see some rational discussion as to why we're going from people self-help density down to this density. It's truly hopscotch development. Why we're not going to vertical mixed use, and whether we can work on that west corner, like you said, maybe doing something vertical with maybe not on the other corner. So that's my thought process at this point, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Well, I've changed my mind on this project. A couple weeks ago, I was very adamant about having the commercial really extend back on that piece of property to where the CVS drugstore exits out onto Cortland. I just, for the reasons that the other council members have mentioned, this is the last piece of property we can develop. I'd love to have more commercial to go shop at in Arroyo Grande. I mentioned lots of tenants that I'd love to shop at to the applicant. He's checked with all of them. So my dream sort of died that I was going to shop at Old Navy on this parcel. I would love to have more commercial there. I think that maybe it's unreasonable at this point to ask him to provide more commercial. I think that he's done his due diligence, and if he could secure tenants for commercial buildings, he would have. He just bought a huge piece of property in Santa Maria on the freeway, and he listed all the commercial tenants, and I was, drooling at all these stores that I'd love to have here in Arroyo Grande. Obviously, he's mentioned the Cortland location to them. They don't have an interest in going here. He has property in North County, commercial property, and he has secured tenants for those buildings. No one's interested in this this location. As far as the future, I started to think about that maybe 5 years from now, maybe 10 years from now, and no one can tell us what it's going to be like then. But I think the market is different. I shop online a lot. I shop on Target online, even before I go to Target. And I think a lot of stores that were bigger, Staples was mentioned by a commercial broker I talked to, used to be a lot bigger. Now they're building a lot smaller stores. Old Navy used to be a lot larger. Now they're building smaller stores. I think that's the wave of the future. I think that we're shopping online, and I think that the stores we're going to see less of them, and we're also going to see less square footage that they're going to require. So I don't know if it's ever going to come back like it was a couple years ago. I also talked to another commercial broker that doesn't have any connection to this project. He was actually used to be a representative for Gap and Old Navy, and he said Old Navy would never come to a location like this. It's actually, he called this a mid-block location. We keep talking about it as this corner location. He said, that's not a corner location, that's mid-block. And that's not where a lot of retailers want to be. And so he said that Old Navy would possibly go in this type of location if it had a huge anchor tenant like Costco next to it. And I don't think we want a Costco there. So I don't think we're going to go in that go that way, and so I think it's going to be really hard to secure these commercial tenants that that we would love, I think all of us would love to have there. Let's see. In compromising, I think that The commercial, if we can get a good, maybe a restaurant in that location and some other small retail businesses, would be great. It's very attractive. I'll give it that. I'll talk about the commercial first. If you just think about the commercial and not really the residential, I really would like to see something totally different than what's proposed. I'd like to see something modern, like Marsh Street Commons, because this looks like, even though it's an attractive, it's an attractive project, the commercial and the residential, the commercial is something that we see, we've seen a lot of. I think it's sort of village-like, and I don't knock that, but I think we need to do something different on Grand Avenue to sort of liven up that end and not mimic what's in the village. So I would like to see a departure from this architecture and do something very, modern, like you would see in a bigger city. And I think that would maybe drive other redevelopment projects, and we could get a lot of cool architecture down that in that area. Now, but saying that, then I struggle with, because the residential needs to sort of blend with the commercial, and I don't know if we're ready to do a real modern residential neighborhood. That might be something we can look at, but I definitely am in favor of having something different for that commercial architecture. I think the residential on the Upper West building, I think we should try that. I think that if we're going to have those buildings a little bit taller, it's going to look nicer, it's going to enclose the street more, and I think that, hopefully we'll get some tenants there. The offices on the Upper East building, I think that would be okay. The odor issue, it's funny. My sister, who's a coffee addict, lived upstairs from a Starbucks, and you would have thought it was the most wonderful thing in the world. She was absolutely hated it after like a month of living there. So I think that the odor can be a problem. I wouldn't have even thought of that until someone else mentioned it. And then, the mixed use is so hard because I love the idea of mixed use. I've been to New York City where everyone lives above the commercial downstairs, and San Francisco and Los Angeles, Hollywood, where my sister lives. But I think it works in the village, and I can name some buildings around here that have tenants upstairs that are residential. But it's hard to get that horizontal mixed use in a city like Arroyo Grande. I think we really struggle, and I think we will struggle to fill those vacancies. I hope that we can if it gets built that way. If we're going to compromise and we're not going to have as much commercial, I'd really like to do something unique for the residential. And I talked to Andy about this. I like the idea in the middle of all the residences facing in, and I actually had tore an article out of a magazine where there's a builder in the Northwest that builds these pocket neighborhoods, and it's kind of crazy. He builds them, and he puts the garages away from the houses. So he does like a row of garages, and so people have to drive in to their garage, and then they walk to their meandering little sidewalk to their house. And the houses are small, 1,000 square feet, 1,200 square feet. The ones I saw were mostly single-story. But it ends up where you have this really neat neighborhood that truly is pedestrian-friendly and truly is bicycle and pedestrian-oriented. We keep saying we want to do that, and I think we can do something like that here. And then we could also use that as a sort of a example for other redevelopment projects. I just wanted to maybe put this on the overhead if it will show up, just to show you the site plan, and this is just, I'm just spitballing here, but I want to put it out there. So it's sort of similar to what's proposed as far as those houses face into a common courtyard, and they're obviously, they're smaller, and they're not They're not, they're single story. And then Teresa, just if you'll go to the site plan. And so it's a little bit hard to see, but you end up with no hardscape. You end up with these nice houses all surrounded by pedestrian paths, and then the garages and the driveways are all on one end. So instead of the development that is being proposed, which we see all the time, because you have to get these people into their garages and you have to have them drive to their house, this is like houses built in the middle of just landscaping, and then all the hardscape and the garages are on one side. And I think that it makes people get out of their car and makes them maybe more apt to walk to the rest of the neighborhood. And then they're not surrounded by hardscape. I think it's still dense. It's probably not as dense as some would like, but I think that it is more attractive. And it's a little bit like apartment living where you park your car someplace else and you walk to your house. But I think the benefits outweigh the negative. So that's just something that I've already given that to Andy to look at. And if we could do something unique like that, it's very successful. If you go on the internet and you Google cottage builders or something like that, they're doing these developments all over, and they're very successful. So that's my two cents on the residential. But again, if we did the commercial very modern, this doesn't, I mean, maybe someone that knows how to design residential could make it work, but this is sort of the opposite. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Any additional comments? So you have enough direction for staff here? All right. So I think with that, we'll bring this to a conclusion. You guys want to take a break before the next one? All right. So we'll take we'll say a 5-minute break, but it always is 10. So we'll come back at 5 after. 8:05.
Well, I may have spoke too soon. I didn't realize we had lost our clerk for about another minute or so. So she's on her way back.
We don't need him.
Okay, council is back in session. And we are moving on to our second new business item. This is 11B, and this is consideration of a pre-application number 14-001, specific plan designation and general plan amendment development code amendment and tentative tract map, and we are going to be addressing the project at Traffic Way and East Cherry. And the applicant is Mangano Homes. And Teresa and Kelly.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Proposed is a draft specific plan for a 15-acre site under three ownerships, and then a conceptual development plan for one of those properties. The project site is bordered by East Cherry Avenue and Traffic Way, and surrounded by residential development to the north and east, St. Barnabas Church to the south, and then a mobile home park to the southwest. This table summarizes the properties as currently configured and identified in the city's general plan and zoning map. Staff assigned sub-areas for the three properties just for easier reference. The applicant has submitted a draft specific plan document that outlines the basic infrastructure needs for all three sub-areas, and the land use, development standards, architectural design, open space calculations, and circulation for sub-area 2. The preliminary site plan for sub-area 2 includes 59 single-family residential lots on 11.74 acres, which reflects a density of about 5 dwelling units per acre. At this time, there are no proposals for sub-areas 1 or 3. However, staff has met with representatives of sub-area 3 who have indicated that a proposal is forthcoming for a Japanese cultural center. Sub-area 1 is currently zoned Traffic Way mixed use with a design overlay. Allowable uses for sub-area 1 are limited to automobile and light truck sales services or related automotive parts stores, repair shops, or similar accessory uses. So focusing on sub-area 2, the project includes one main access from East Cherry Avenue with a looped internal street for the majority of the lots, and an alley access for the lots located closer to East Cherry. This configuration eliminates staff's original concern of providing multiple driveways off of East Cherry. On-site parking is provided on one side of the internal street and along the south side of East Cherry. Travel lanes are 10 feet wide for the interior streets and then 11 feet wide for East Cherry. Landscaped parkways are used throughout the project, which also provides biofiltration for stormwater runoff. A street stub out is proposed on the south end of the property in anticipation of providing future access to properties located further south, such as the undeveloped 86-acre Fredericks property. This would entail a route that traverses the open space of St. Barnabas Church. And then an emergency access is proposed between lots 24 and 25 through sub-area 3 to connect with Lawn Lane, which is necessary for both the existing and proposed neighborhoods to satisfy fire code requirements for two points of connection. There are two options with this required connection. One is to connect with a 40-foot wide standard residential street that would allow regular vehicular access between the residential neighborhoods. This is staff's preferred alternative since it would promote full connectivity between these two neighborhoods. It is also apparent from the design of Lana Lane that this was intended to be pushed through when the adjacent property developed. The second alternative would provide an emergency access only with bollards to prevent through vehicular traffic, yet allow pedestrian and bicycle access. Staff strongly recommends to not sever this neighborhood connection altogether. Parking requirements for small lot developments include two spaces per unit within an enclosed garage, and then a half a space per unit for visitor parking, which in this case would be 30 guest spaces. The project exceeds the guest parking requirement by providing a total of 70 on-street spaces. However, there has been mentioned a concern potentially that the existing residents on East Cherry Avenue would lose their ability to park on the street with the proposed development. Currently, and as proposed, parking on East Cherry is limited to the south side of the street, which provides about 28 spaces along that sub-area 2 frontage. Because lots 1 through 11 have an alley access, there is no internal on-street parking for those units. Therefore, they would need six spaces for guest parking, six of the 28 spaces, leaving 22 spaces to be shared with the 11 residential units across the street. Although not required, staff utilized the plan unit development standards as a general guide for reviewing this project. The standards for the Village Residential Zoning District were also applied since this is the proposed underlying zoning. In this comparison, staff found that the project exceeds the maximum density of the VR zoning district, but more than meets the open space requirements of the PUD, including a quarter-acre park at the project entrance. Lot sizes, setbacks, and lot coverage can be modified through either the PUD or specific plan process, so those project deviations are not considered an issue. The applicant also proposes to utilize the city's village design guidelines for determining the architectural style of the homes. Therefore, the project includes bungalow, craftsman, and cottage styles for the residential units. Homes will be one or two stories, not to exceed 25 feet in height, with second story step back by 5 feet. Lots and homes will be similar, will be smaller than typical homes developed throughout the city and therefore more affordable by design. All parking and driveway areas will use colored porous pavers to reduce the contrast between drives and structures and also to reduce stormwater runoff. The primary issue related to this proposal is the conversion of prime agricultural land to residential use for subarea 2 and to public facilities for subarea 3. The general plan requires specific mitigation for conversions, which includes permanent protection of prime farmland soils at a ratio of at least 1:1 and up to 2:1. Permanent protection essentially means dedication of an agricultural conservation easement for ag properties located within or contiguous to the city's boundaries, within the city's sphere of influence, or within the larger Arroyo Grande Valley area. Other potential mitigation includes payment of in-lieu fees or other mitigation that would be acceptable to your council. Conversion of ag land is considered a significant an unavoidable impact, and therefore an environmental impact report will be required. The applicant is already researching potential agricultural conversion easements within the city limits as mitigation. Another concern is the inclusion of residential backyards within the 25-foot wide creek setback area located along the southern property line. This channel is not identified as a blue line creek for the USGS maps, but is identified in the city's general plan street map as a waterway, as shown in this slide. This is an enlargement of that slide for this particular area. It's a little blurry, sorry about that. The development code requires a minimum setback of 25 feet for all creeks and drainage ways for the purpose of protecting water quality and riparian habitat corridors, also to minimize flooding and provide aesthetic and passive recreational opportunities. Having residential backyards within the setback area does not ensure environmental protection of the water course, nor provide any aesthetic or passive recreational opportunities on subarea 3. The adjustment would also give about 1.7 acres to subarea 1 for greater commercial development potential. This slide shows a summary of the proposed land use and zoning designations, as well as the adjusted site areas for the three subareas. The general plan and development code amendments necessary to formally approve the project would change land use and zoning designations for all three subareas as reflected in this table. And then, of course, the tentative tract map would be required for the residential subdivision on subarea 2. So in conclusion, the applicant is seeking comments from the council regarding the conceptual plans. It is anticipated that the applicant will consider and incorporate feasible suggestions and comments from City Council into the plan, and then work with staff to hold community workshops to obtain public input and potentially revise the plans in response to those public comments. during this time. It is hoped that more information about subareas 1 and 3 will be provided. The city will then circulate a request for proposal to prepare the EIR. Once the draft EIR is completed, the city will hold public hearings to formally consider the project. So that's my presentation. I know that the applicant has a presentation as well. So if you want to hold off questions, you can ask me now, whatever you want to do.
Okay, we'll hear the presentation from the applicant, and then we'll have questions.
Good evening, council, members of staff, and audience. My name is Stephen Peck with Mangano Homes. I'm a consultant on the specific plan before you tonight. My business address is 735 Tank Farm Road in San Luis Obispo. On behalf of Mangano Homes, we thank the staff for their time and for your audience this evening. Just like Debbie and Scott did, I'll be followed up by Randy Russom from RRM to describe some of the more detailed and attractive design concepts. I think what we have for you this evening is, which way do you want us to go on a couple design issues? Staff has assisted us in identifying some of their preliminary issues, and I think we've identified solutions to those. Kelly mentioned the on-street parking, and as she indicated, we seem to be providing a couple of guest spaces for our neighbors across the street, which is a positive outcome. Use of the alley-loaded product on Cherry and the First Internal Street certainly has opened up a lot of opportunities there. One of the important pieces of this project is, in looking at it on the three properties, is the transfer of about 0.4 acres to our neighbors to the east, what we refer to as the Japanese Cultural Center. Their site is fairly pinched on the front and doesn't really provide a window to them. So, and the part of the reason for doing the specific plan for the project is to allow us to transfer some property to them so they have an adequate parking area, adequate common access. We can actually take some of their drainage onto our site, and so it just seems to make sense to do it overall. Same thing with the property that fronts on the traffic way. It doesn't make any sense for them to plan for our setbacks and us to plan for theirs. Doing it as one comprehensive approach seems to be the best solution available. We think that the project before you fits in well with our surrounding neighbors, and by using the village residential guidelines, we're going to provide a high-quality product that I think you'll be satisfied with. Randy will go into more detail about those issues. It also, as I think Kelly mentioned and your staff report mentioned, exceeds the city's open space requirements. We have some options, especially with the path that's going through the middle of the neighborhood as we're originally proposing, to provide low-impact development options, basically a widened front yard, a central amenity for the entire development as an option, as we'll explain later on. We could simply transfer that 25 feet to the back of the project adjacent to your open space. That makes it less available for the residences, but perhaps that's a better transition. We also think that the original submittal that we made has benefited from the staff's comments. As I mentioned, we've eliminated any access to Cherry Avenue. That has been a positive change. We formalized the pedestrian approach and the options along our pedestrian corridor going through the middle of the project and adjusted the road cross-section along Cherry Avenue to comply with, I think, the master plan or the road plan lines that were provided to us. We also adjusted the internal road guidelines so that we can provide a 6-foot parkway strip, which allows us to get into some storage of water and therefore the low-impact development requirements, as well as providing a pretty intensely tree-lined street. We can do a lot more with a 6-foot parkway than we can with a formwater, so very little of that really goes off-site. We believe the taking it through the middle of the project has some aesthetic and functional merit, but we can also transfer that area to the south adjacent to the open space. The waterway setback is, we understand the staff's position on that. Randy will share some pictures with you that this waterway isn't similar to the waterway that's upstream or used to be upstream. We get very little cross flow in this area, and in many respects, it's simply the drainage coming off the hill as it presently is. In preparation, we actually had one of our biologists take a look at it. In her opinion, it doesn't qualify as a stream under California Department of Fish and Wildlife guidelines. There's no permitting required of that. In her opinion, it appears to be something less than a stream. Maybe it's a casual drainage, but perhaps that's simply a factual determination that we can provide to you with a formal letter of opinion in that regard. And with a 25-foot setback, I note that in your conservation and open space policies, they refer to a riparian setback for the purpose of conserving the riparian vegetation. Much of that is actually across the drainage on the uphill side. So what we need to do to preserve that vegetation or the existing resources probably should be at least measured from the existing minor crown that's there or from the vegetation itself to comply with the open space policy. Finally, with regard to the circulation connections, we're going to show you a couple options. One includes simply an emergency access to the stub street to the east. One is to we could provide a vehicle connection as well, extending that street as described by city staff. There's also a third option we can consider, which is simply looping our street around onto Cherry Avenue if any connection between those two subdivisions becomes infeasible. Randy can go over those in more detail and illustration. Our position is we would just like to be provided with a little bit of guidance as to which one you might prefer so we can firm up our project description. It's not something that we're forcing, but simply looking at which one of those three preferred options you may have. With that, I'll let Randy take over the balance of the presentation.
Need a pointer, Randy? That's what they're looking for. Yeah, that'll work.
That might help through the discussion.
Mayor, council members, we appreciate the opportunity to present this project to you. We've been beneficiaries of the pre-application process here. We've taken two passes through the pre-SAC process, gotten a lot of feedback and improvement along the way. And as Kelly noted, we even have an additional option that has been presented in response to the ongoing discussions here. When we met Andy, when he chose to bring this project forward, we all viewed it as an extension of the village. So that was one of our driving forces as we started to generate architecture, generate lot size, and generate overall concept for this project. We're looking for something that extends the pedestrian atmosphere of our village and allows for interconnectivity of neighborhoods. As we, this would be a good time to move forward to the elevations. Nick, one more. So part of our package includes some conceptual elevations. They're not finished designs in any way, but they speak to the cottage, bungalow, craftsman style and the scale and massing that we'd be bringing forward as the project progresses. You'll see the elevation extends from the Iketa property all the way down through the bottom slide there, where the bottom of the slide is the project entrance with the park. And our specific plan includes the improvement of the entire East Cherry frontage, landscaping, parkway, sidewalks, trees. Through this process, as Kelly mentioned, we've eliminated any driveway access onto Cherry Lane, which is represented in these drawings, which provides us with 26 spots along the along Cherry for parking. Currently, the other side of the street utilizes the agriculture area's guest parking or additional parking. That accounts for about 11 residences, which by ordinance would end up having to accommodate. And for me, would you go back to two?
So this was a result of two passes through SAC and the desire, I'll go back one more for me, please. And the desire for a walkable neighborhood and to bring some connectivity from the older neighborhood on down to the addition of the public park on the corner. We responded to that by adding a linear park through the center of the project right here that connects from the access down through and over to the park. This is utilized to provide open space. It provides a public amenity, and it also provides for the, what I'm sure you guys are all aware, the new stormwater requirements where we have to actually treat and store on site all our water. So that would be incorporated into the full development there. So while it may be painted green, it would be a variety of landscape materials and atmosphere there. Through the process, we came to the point where there was question as to the status of this creek area or drainage swale or ditch, as it might be described, and the desire for some setback there, potentially some walking trails there. So could you go one more? So we provide an alternative to you to consider, which is move that linear park. Oops, other direction, you were there. There we go. Which move the linear park along that that 25-foot open space or 25-foot creekside setback, if it's determined to be a creek. I think this is a fine point to discuss that. It's not designated as a Blue Line Creek, although it is part of the city general plan. I don't know when that designation occurred, but I do know that in, was it 2009, we had a drainage structure that went into Cherry Creek that, by city designation, effectively took all of Newsom Springs water and diverted it to the creek prior to ever reaching this spot. So the conditions which might have established that as a waterway, creek, or drainage have changed in subsequent years. And as Steve alluded to, I think it's probably appropriate that we go forward, get a designation from a biologist, and find out what that is if we need to have that 25-foot setback. If that is where we land, we find this an acceptable alternative and hope you guys do too, but we believe that the previous one with the linear park to the interior of the project, it would be the ideal community amenity here. Kelly, can you swing forward to, I don't know how many, two or three? One more. We provided a rendering of what that linear park and interior space might be looking like. And just to speak to that notion of whether we have any riparian vegetation or creek back there, can you step through the next couple of slides where I've provided, this is the status of this drainage area now. This is going from what would be, I guess, the easternmost portion of the property, and then we just step down it, if you would like to step through those slides. Continue on through that, if you would. You can see it's no more than the most minimal of runoff control. Typically a creek where drainage is designed for conveyance of water, and this is where it terminates into a small, that's about a 10-inch drain line at the end of this. So ultimately, what we're looking to get out of this process, which, you know, I've indicated that we're evolving as we go forward here, is I think we've worked pretty successfully with staff with all the issues that they had, with the exception of defining how we're dealing with this creek setback, if there is such a creek or drainage there. And if it is not the case, where would be most desirable to put some linear park elements, some pathways? We would propose that if it is more desirable to have it on internal, and we were able to determine that that is not something we need to provide a 25-foot setback from, then we could proceed that direction. If we do have to provide a 25-foot setback, then our second alternative would be an effective way to address that. I think with that, we'll open it up to your questions.
Right. Before you sit down, Randy, and it may be premature, but in some of your preliminary discussions, has there been discussion of
better? Yes. So I understand the reason for the path next to the creek. I actually prefer the path that's interior to the project just because I feel like it'll be used more. And if this was a true, real nice creek, I understand the reason why we might want to put a path next to it. But you mentioned that eventually or soon you can see this path connecting where?
Like, you can't show it on this particular diagram, but and it hasn't been worked out. It's just,
right.
You know, the thought of communicating with the church and providing some kind of trail on their property, and there's a property owner adjacent to them, and then connecting then back to, there's a street that it can connect to in the other neighborhood.
Okay, so the church property is about where?
The church property is everything that is located below that creekway. So you can see the church.
That's the church right there. Okay, so that's all their land down below.
That's all
below.
Their land. It's open space, yeah. It's pretty steep right there.
Right. And so you said it might connect through the church property and the other property and then end up on Lana Lane or which street, Kelly?
There's another street that's down a ways, but this is all very, very conceptual. It's just...
Well, I know, but I want to sort of see, I mean, if we're looking 5 years in the future, I'm just trying to envision where it will go. I want to make sure if we have them put it there that we have a pretty good idea that it will go somewhere eventually, or I'd prefer the interior path that, you know, you can walk around the block that's actually a really nice a nice treatment of the... in, you know, interior.
So I would suggest that this pedestrian connectivity issue, I'm sure will be brought up as regards the neighboring Japanese Welfare Association property. And the connection of the creekside path alternative would be contingent in some part, perhaps, to that. So looking at different opportunities to provide, we setting aside vehicular connectivity aside for a moment or even emergency access and looking at pedestrian connectivity, we're looking for obviously internal to the project and external to surrounding areas. The opportunities at first glance would be to connect whichever path, either path through in conjunction with a street or an emergency connection through that Japanese Welfare Association property right here. Now, we know that there's issues in conjunction with desired opportunities for a project on that property. And in looking at other opportunities, the thought occurred, and this is really after staff report preparation, to look at off-site opportunities, and that would be to again utilize sort of a open space area. We have one in the city, a James Way Habitat area. I think Tony mentioned this, and we can meet connectivity issues between neighborhoods with something like that, and that would connect perhaps off-site or a conjunction of on-site and off-site to the neighboring street connection, and I want to say it's Lana, and I'm not quite sure if that's correct. Another opportunity, again, acknowledging that the straight-through PED connection may be problematic, would be to use the internal connection in something along this line diagonally. The important thing to recognize here is we try to use the creeks in the city for multiple benefit. not only conveying water, even if it's intermittent or incidental drainage water, and that was well recognized in the creek study that it wouldn't, that we're providing protection for our creeks and drainage ways. But and those habitat concerns, in addition to conveying water to wildlife corridors, and to use those in what opportunities may present themselves as also creekside paths, and we're trying to gain those over time through the city. That was the precipitant of the staff recommendation to consider that and consider that creekside path. There's different ways it can connect.
Yeah, I just want, so that answers my question. I just, independent of the other two paths that you brought up, just specifically this one, I just wanted to know if there was some thought that it was.
Woman Barnich, I would just mention that depending on the road connection out, the 10 or the 11 foot may be needed for that, depending on that connection. But the interior interior travel ways is 10 foot. Was it's a skinnier street, but is acceptable to staff.
Okay. Do you have something to add?
That was sort of worked out with the city is that direction. It wasn't an arbitrary decision, and was driven in part by the desire for a wider parkway so that we can get full street trees in a 6-foot space there and get some bioswale activity.
Okay.
In our mind, the trade-off was skinnier, quieter, more pedestrian-oriented neighborhood, not car-oriented, and so that was the driving force there.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. And then the 25-foot creek setback is from the top of bank. So as it stands right now, say we didn't have the path behind the houses, and I think when I met with the applicant, we talked about this, but I can't remember. So from top of bank, where does the creek setback currently end up now, 25 feet?
The 25 feet goes into the backyards. So there's a fence. There's the drainage. There's the fence. And then there's the whole 25 feet is in within the backyards. That was the point, that there's no way to do what the intention of that setback is when it's within private closed off areas.
Okay. Now,
can I add a moment of clarification to that again?
Sure.
You were going back to the original or the with the internal street there and what we had as far as setback goes?
No. Well, I was just asking about the creek setback because I remember when we met, we talked about the creek setback, and we also talked about, I remember talking about drainage and flooding, and you talked about you were maybe going to make up for that 25-foot setback as far as potential flooding with, I can't remember, retaining walls, or you were grading something.
What we provided in the original one with the internal linear park there,
yeah,
we provided a 15-foot drainage area in the back of the. From that 15 feet, then there was additional 25 feet to any structures. So we had a 15-foot area to deal with any sort of drainage issues in there.
That was outside of the fence?
Outside of the fence, okay. Outside of the 25 feet that would be internal to the property or the backyard area.
Okay.
Which is, represented there. So you can see wherever we got there, a little dashed line right in there, and that was representative of a 15-foot drainage area to deal with any flooding that we may have to address. You have to understand that no hydrology studies have been done at this time, so to what degree we have to accommodate it, we're just taking shots in the dark.
Okay. And then my final question is, Teresa or Kelly, the fire department, at the minimum, we have to have an emergency access, the fire department has stated, between the Lana Lane and this development. Is that true?
Well, you just have to have a secondary access. It doesn't necessarily have to be at that juncture.
Okay. So when they talked about there's no access there, we'd have to have another one that I think Randy talked about looping around and going back out onto Cherry. Okay. All right. Thank you. Those are all my questions.
Okay. Questions only?
I do.
Go ahead.
Randy, I have a question that really hasn't been addressed. It's been alluded to, but hasn't been addressed, and that is
the most passionate thing that I have on this project, and that is ag mitigation. So can you, in some term, talk about that? Because to me, that's the biggest issue for this project.
Well, I may not be the appropriate guy to talk about that, but they'll step in if I misstep here. There have been talks with multiple landowners. The intent is a one-to-one mitigation within the city limits and through the means established in the ordinance. So there would be a land conservancy established to protect that.
Okay. Then I want to move on to a few other things. I got a letter on the dais from the Japanese welfare folks, and I was really concerned to see that. I'm assuming you're in some sort of communication with them and what their desires are and what their goals are?
From the beginning, there has been communication. We haven't seen their latest example of the direction they want to go on the project. But
have you seen this letter from July 5th?
I do not believe I have, no.
Do you mind if I just hand it to you?
Sure.
The other question I have is about the. Go ahead. It looks like you wanted to pipe in there. Go ahead.
We just went down to 10 feet in a portion of Fair Oaks. It's been working fine.
Okay. And then the parking on Cherry that you keep mentioning, you're calling it guest parking. That is, you're using street parking as part of your guest requirement. Is that right?
Yes. Any of the alley-loaded lots do not have any on-site parking aside from their two garage units.
So you're basically using a public street for your guest parking?
Yes, that would be the case.
What do you think allows you to use public access and public streets as your guest parking requirement?
We've, in effect, provided beyond any parking needs that were indicated in the ordinance on site.
So why
by
can't
a 2-to-1 basis?
Why can't you put, if that's true, why can't you put your guest parking on internally to the project?
We can accommodate all of the guest parking internal to the project. We have 70 spaces provided total. I believe, let me do the math here, 42 of them would be internal to the project. At 59 lots, that would have a requirement of 30 spaces, so we would still. If we required everybody to park internal to the project, we would still have an additional 15
including
spaces.
Guest parking.
Including guest parking.
So why do you keep talking about guest parking on the street?
Well, there was a concern of the guest parking, well, accommodating the parking for the other side of Cherry, the existing residences there, that they have utilized that, which one can assume is their guest parking. So that's how that
I'm more concerned about your project, though. That's the key. The other question I have is about drainage, and I think you alluded to the idea that because Newsom Springs has kind of been rerouted,
yes.
It's your opinion, at least preliminarily, that you're not going to be having a lot of off-site water?
It is my opinion that it is something that should be evaluated, that I'm not in a position to evaluate, and I believe the evaluation that arrived at this designation may be obsolete at this time and should be looked at.
Okay. And you also believe, based on the new regulations, that you can take care of all your on-site water?
Yes. We have no choice in that, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any questions? Mayor Pro Tem, questions?
You can keep that if you want.
Yeah, so I think my question was similar to Councilman Brown's. The 100% from Newsom Springs, that's not an established, that there is no overflow from Newsom Springs. Is that established one way or another?
Yeah, the Newsom Springs project dealt with that regional drainage in two phases. The first phase is implemented. The second phase is not yet implemented. Nonetheless, the stone culvert correction does redirect the flow, so the phase two water, those big rain event waters, would likely flood the farm field on the northeast side of Branch Mill. And incidental flows, small flows, will still get through the culvert and go down. So We expect nothing like historical water flows that would occasionally flood in that area to occur. It should be remedied. However, we need to make sure that there's an avenue for not only the hillside collection of water, but some water conveyance through the site. Again, as Randy suggested, that would have to be ferreted out with the study for this particular project in terms of how much.
Okay. And then on the emergency secondary access, which I understand there are alternatives here, if the Japanese Society were to come forward with a project, would they have a access issue as well?
They'll need, depending on what's actually proposed, they'll likely need at least a route for a truck to get out at the other end of the property or a hammerhead. I should note that a primary concern for at least for emergency access would be for the existing neighborhood, Lana Lane, Los Olivos route, because that is a long longer than 600 feet, and we would want to maintain some avenue for exit of vehicles in an emergency to be able to get out of that neighborhood through. It doesn't have to go straight across, but we need it to go somewhere in the event of emergency.
Okay. Yeah, that was going to be my next question. And then on the alternative, and I know it's real conceptual, the possible pathway going over onto the church property, wouldn't you actually then have to cross this creek waterway twice? And what kind of environmental issues are you going to would you see with crossing this riparian area?
Well, currently, the perimeter drainage infrastructure that goes around Dixon Ranch that was adjacent to Branch Mill, and then connected into the large swale that's part of Cherry Creek, recognizing that was phase one, and phase two, if I understand it, is underground conveyance from the bottom of Newsom Springs where it comes into Branch Mill, which would then go cut across the Dixon Ranch with enough clearance so that you could farm on top of it. And that would be a straight shot into the same drainage conveyance in Cherry Creek. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So what is the time frame for that second phase? Do we know?
It's entirely dependent on likely grant funding to be able to get that, and that would be an agricultural benefit.
How far along is the project? In other words, what would it take to get something like that shovel ready? And the reason why I'm asking is obviously there's kind of an indirect relationship to where I'm going next here, but there clearly is a lot of activity on the state water bond issues, and I know the league is very active in this as well, and part of it is stormwater conveyance. So there may well be grant money available, and so we're looking at trying to figure out how close we are to getting a shovel-ready project so that we can perhaps be at the head of the queue for grant funding, similar to what we want to do with water recycling, one of the reasons why we're moving ahead with the groundwater basin study. So what would it take to get us there?
The design for phase two was very preliminary. It looked at different options in terms of crossing the field and maintaining that cover as you referred. I think we're a ways out from being shovel-ready on that project in that there's no easy solution, and additional design would have to occur.
Okay. And then looking at this, and I'm sorry, but I can't call this a creek. I'll call it a drainage swale.
That's fine.
Looking at the geology of this, and I recognize the watershed here. It's kind of a steeper cliff that kind of goes down. Refresh my memory. When we look at the tract here where Lana Lane is, what is the setback here? And Do we have a similar watershed? It looks from this picture that we have similar terrain here that would impact that same drainage conveyance. Is it similar, and what are the setbacks here?
I do not know the precise setbacks. I don't believe, I think the structural setback is probably close to 25 feet. The yards are obviously in that setback, the backyards.
Okay, and would it be the same for, I forget the name of the tract that we refer to, where we had the issue some years ago with a buffer zone? Refresh my memory. That borders Branch Mill right at the L.
Coker Ellsworth tract.
The what?
Coker Ellsworth.
Yeah, the Ellsworth tract.
Yes, similar.
What does it look like there?
Similar yards would be within, at least some of them, within the, what would, you know, those two tracks were built prior to any setback requirements whatsoever. So there's just backyard space adjacent to that drainageway. We did get 25-foot setbacks, structural setback, on that lot, last lot that wasn't able to be constructed until Newsom Springs Phase 1 was implemented. And that was an issue on that project. I would note that staff did go out and take photos of water behind that those homes during significant rain events. Doesn't likely occur often, but we certainly had significant rain events in 2009, and there was water back there.
Well, so let's go back to when phase one for Newsom Springs was in fact put in. Since that time, given the fact that we have had some heavy rainfall years, have we ever had along any of these neighborhoods any kind of a flooding issue?
Yeah, you know, neighbors out there may know. I'm not sure about the residences along that drainage way because of their elevation, but we do.
All right, and that and so the connectivity internally here would connect to this park here. And did I understand that this park was in fact going to increase a little in size a little, or not?
We suspect the potential for that to occur by the time we actually have the hydrology studies and know what flow we're dealing with there. And at this point, the bioswale and the retention design is, especially when you try to integrate it into a site in a sensitive manner as opposed to just putting a big ditch out there, is a little bit of an art form also. And so we recognize that this would be the minimal amount of park we would be bringing forward, and the potential exists for us to have to provide more just to accommodate that.
Okay, thanks. Last question, and that is, not for you.
All right.
Sorry. And I want to come back to the conversation, Teresa, that you and I had. Obviously, I think a lot of us are concerned about not so much connectivity, but our trail network in the city, and we talked about the possibility of perhaps looking forward at some development of the Fredericks property at some point in the future, but in the meantime, looking at perhaps establishing something similar to the trail network that we have on James Way, which actually is much more rural, and the potential of perhaps sitting around the table with the church, the owners of the property, which I think is a church, and establishing a more rural meandering trail off of here that truly would be a have connectivity and perhaps could better connect in this area towards Branch Mill and then even up the hill with some subsequent development. And while it seems like it's, you know, there's a lot of preliminary planning that needs to take place, it's still something that we could look at. Is that correct?
That's correct, and I think that would go a long way toward mitigating if there's not the direct connectivity provided internally with this project. It would certainly, in conjunction with this project, help mitigate that.
Okay. All right. Those are my questions, and this is not a public hearing, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and make the assumption that there are at least one or two people in the audience that want to say something. So we're going to open it up to public comment. Okay. So, Margaret, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Thanks for letting me speak.
Just pull the mic down.
Yes. My name's Margaret Ikeda. I grew up here in Arroyo Grande. Both sides of my family farmed here, Fukuhara family on my mom's side, and the Ikeda brothers that are still farming here on my dad's side. He was one of the Ikeda brothers. So my role here tonight is really to help you all gain a better understanding of the history of our 1.5-acre property. The letter you have, and hopefully that is not only helpful to you, but open if people in the public want to read it, it would be accessible to them as well. We included a timeline in the back that started in the 1920s leading up to the present to review, just to have a better understanding of the events that took place on the site, because we know that generally for the Japanese American community, they bought it in the 1920s for their it's really a sanctuary for the community when they were immigrants and they were foreigners. So from the 20s to the 60s, because I remember going to events there. So when I was young, we would use the hall there. That's when the property was used mostly by the Japanese American community. But since the 60s, I would think most of the public associate the property with the Boy Scouts as a site of the Boy Scouts, because the Boy Scouts were there from the 60s to the present, really, until they just recently moved, as well as the Five Cities Judo. So we rented it to the Boy Scouts at the cost of whatever it costs to operate the property, so essentially never made money from it. It wasn't for a profit. It was to actually, because our community wasn't utilizing the property, it allowed others to use it. So in 2011, I got a phone call from my cousin at about 7:30 in the morning, and he told me that the last remaining historical building had been burnt down to the ground. And it, on the phone, it felt like a death of a legacy. It shook the community because, one, it was destroyed by a crime, so it was an arson. It was arsonists that... So things like this would have to be stored. So that must have been stored under the stage and forgotten, really. And it wasn't until the fire, in some strange way, that it revealed itself to us again like a seed. And as a reminder that there's still tangible evidence. It may not be the scale of a building, but it's in an artifact like a teapot or in a photograph that has been, you know, has been seen as part of the letter that remind us of what has been there before. So one of the things over the last year when we've been working on this project, trying to figure out how do we best honor our immigrant ancestors, one of the things that has become much more clear, but it took some time, was the importance of keeping a space for these kinds of things to be remembered. And I brought Lillian. It's very late because I wanted Lillian, her family, she can talk directly to one experience. And so she's just going to share with you one thing that happened on the site after the war. It was right after the, I guess it was, well, you can tell. She'll just shortly tell you her firsthand experience about her family.
Oh, you want me to stay?
About when the family came back.
Oh, yes. We were in camp during the war, and but I didn't return back, but my family did. And they stayed at the Japanese school until they were able to go find a place to live, and they moved up to San Jose area. But I think it'd be nice if we could, you know, have things that will... Because we do not have too much things about the Japanese, and we had a very few, quite a few Japanese live in this area, but because of the alien law, they were not able to purchase any property because they were alien and the kids were young yet. So that's why most of us did not return back in this area. And so this school really means a lot to us. And and I was born in Avalon Cave Landing. And so there's not very many that very return. And so I think it's nice to have something that represents our Japanese American families here that are here, third generation. And thanks to Margaret. And she doesn't even live here. She lives up in Berkeley. And she's so good about coming here to help us to preserve our ancestors, Japanese history and things. So thank you.
So where we are now is what we're interested in, because we haven't submitted. We will be hopefully submitting to pre-application very soon. But our interest right now is really to maintain space for memories like Lillian's that 1.5 acre property is the intersection of the watershed, where the watershed touches the alluvial valley of Arroyo Grande. So it's this very interesting center point of this valley from the upper valley to the lower valleys. Arroyo Grande sort of falls right in the center, and this swath is actually right in the center. So our interest is to retain that rural property, and that property is overlaid with close to 100 years of history. So how to keep that space and really honor the land. So we're interested in honoring the rural land of Arroyo Grande and the history that overlays with that land. And though we're not presenting our project here, when buildings manifest themselves, they will manifest themselves in values of our immigrant ancestors. So it will be about community, about education, about commerce. And we look forward to presenting that to you hopefully in the next couple months. But I wanted to close by reminding the council that in 2003, you also valued this rural piece of property and converted what was mixed use, it was zoned mixed use, to agriculture. And much to the opposition of many people that are sitting here today, because it limited the use, they understood that it limited the use of that 1.5 piece of property. But you valued agriculture within the city, and we're here to say we value, where our project will be about valuing the rural nature of this community as it has been used by the Japanese community, and it will be our gift back, not only to ourselves, but to the community. So two things I also want to put on the record is, we knew we were talking to Andy and their project, and we knew about Dorfman's project, but we did not know we were part of this this proposed plan. And it wasn't until we also asked, so we asked for a meeting, which they, were gracious to grant us on Wednesday night, last Wednesday, to talk about our project. We wanted to talk about some issues that we have because we're trying to get our submittal in. And it was at that project when we were talking about that we can't do that, we can't do this piece because of the nature of our project, that we learned about this public review. We even learned that this pre-application was going to public review. And even though it's obviously representing Andy's project, we clearly, as you can see, we're part of this discussion. So it's concerning that we have been talking to the city for over a year about a legacy project, and it started off this way, that we've had to sort of galvanize the troops very late. We've been emailing, texting each other, you got to get in here, because bodies, this is a small part of the community. This is just a small part of this Japanese community that's farming, and they're staying up very late to be here in the council. So I wanted to put that on the record that it's not a very good way to begin from our point of view, because we have been trying to have communication, and to find out this way is, I would say, quite annoying. But regardless, I just want to stress the history here. My cousins will follow up with a few things. But so I just want to leave you with that, that putting a road in the back will destroy. I think you can understand that. It's putting a road in the most private part of our property, which is a space that it is a place, the whole acreage is what we want to keep Development Bay. There is, as you know, space, just having a space to remember is something that we want to do. And there's always pressures to develop, especially as the city grows and becomes more popular, the value of that land becomes, you know, there's a reason why development is happening around us. But the enduring values of our ancestors, of our immigrant pioneers that have not yet been recognized in Arroyo Grande, is something that's more important to us. So that's why we strongly urge you to not pursue an easement through the two properties. We understand from a planning point of view, it makes sense on some level, but it would also make sense for us to divide our property up into eight lots and sell it, because that would be a sensible, maybe smart way to go, easier way to go. But we're just saying we're trying to hold our ground. We want to keep the space free, so it allows us to have a space to remember our families and give back to the community.
Margaret, before you sit down, in the staff report there was some discussion of an alternative that might, if you can look at the screen here, that I understand you at least have, do you at least have this portion conceptualized as a parking area?
Part of it's hardscape and part of it's an orchard where our cars can be parked.
Okay.
But it's definitely, we've left probably three times as much as the park in the Mangana Home area for a buffer for the street. So because our building is built down, we couldn't leave it open as it is now. We'll have a security, it won't look like a security, but we'll have a fence. We'll have a barrier tucked back farther. But the front part will be a grove of trees with parking. And so we were talking to Teresa and Kelly that could be one way to connect, that we could, you know, that they, instead of, the way I walk to our site is not from Traffic Way. I would walk through the village and onto Pacific Railroad, and so it would allow the community to do the same without having to go all the way down.
So conceivably, could it, if it, we're talking emergency access, could it, if there was a landscaped area that went, say, from this corner of the project in this direction towards Cherry, is that doable or not?
I don't know how you could have I don't think so, because you wouldn't have the width for a fire truck down that alley. So if it's a fire easement, I don't think. I mean, you'd have to change what we, obviously, you know, this is all pre-application.
Right. Yeah, I'm just trying to get a general idea if it's even workable.
I don't know. We'd have to.
Given where you're at right now.
We could talk, but yeah,
it's
an area which is more open to the public than the back end.
Okay, so. Good. Thank you. Bard?
We increase the chance for more vandalism or even, you know, God forbid, arson again. I hope that any and all proposed changes to our property would be communicated to us before they're presented to the council. And I wanted to say that I strongly oppose the option that's up there on the board right now that is being strongly represented by your staff. And in closing, I still look forward to seeing this what I've always called the Japanese school property, return to a site that we can all be proud of. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Gary, how are you?
Good. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and the council members for allowing us to speak. My name is Gary Kubara. I live at 2320 Gracia Way, Arroyo Grande. I believe it was in 2003 a group of us spoke against the changes of the zoning on this property. I find it kind of interesting that we were at the time trying to build homes on it, but we were told that we were ag, even though that piece of property hadn't been ag since the community had bought it. But we went to ag, and so now we're trying to work within the time frame and do what we can with ag designation. And now we're being told that we have to put a road through the middle of it. That kind of goes back to being, if you had a road through it, we could have built on it. So it's kind of mind-boggling to me. But it is what it is, and we'll work with it. But I am against the road and the parkway going through the subsection, sub-area 3. My reason for this is the history of the property and its future use. The property would be cut in half, making it almost impossible to keep the property as one usable parcel. I'm a third-generation farmer in Rio Grande. My grandparents were original members of the Rio Grande Japanese Welfare Association. It is my wish to honor my grandparents and parents with the project on the property. Some of the historical uses of the property and buildings were social gathering place, a church, a school, a hostel, baseball field, homes, and a Boy Scout area. The War Relocation Authority, WRA, had in its archives letters from my aunt requesting housing for people returning to the Rio Grande area. The people were returning from relocation camps after World War II to see if they could come back and reestablish their lives here. The WRA were requesting places for people to stay on farms and this property. On a personal note, I went to Japanese school on this property at the site on Saturdays. But I have to admit, I remember more about sports than studies I learned. My cousins lived on the property a number of years, so I remember it was a big deal for me to ride my bike there the first time. Hopefully, the future generations will remember some of the rich Japanese history in the area by preserving it on this place of ground, on this piece of ground. I ask that you not require a road or footpath be placed across the middle of the property so that someday, hopefully soon, we will have a place to share the rich history of our parents and grandparents in the area. Thank you for your consideration.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Who would like to come up next?
Counting this as my time, are you? I'm sorry, it's not a better picture. I'm Shirley Gibson for Bennett Loomis Archives, and this photo comes from a 1981 Harvest Festival issue of the Herald Recorder. And the building to the left was the cultural hall built in sometime in the 1930s. And the house on the right was built probably in the teens, and that's where the Japanese in the street. But I wanted to preface, I come from a culture where it's important for my children to know our family history so it's not forgotten. And listening tonight, I know, and I've had conversations with some Japanese friends, that it's important that that heritage and culture is never lost. We live in a town that we pride ourselves on history. We're in the historic center, and I think it would be a shame to take that away. So that was not part of my speech. First of all,
like Margaret said, nobody knew about this. And I was called last week, and so I got my notes together. Today's newspaper, or yesterday's, it shows the Government Watch mentioned the project we discussed before, which is 0.002, but 0.001 wasn't even printed. So it really wasn't open to the public in a fair way to let them know that this was coming down in our community, and I think residents on Cherry and on Lawn and Lane would also be interested in knowing what's going on. Get so shaky talking to groups, you know. Let's see. First of all, I believe that Lana Lane, I know, I've lived there for over 12 years, Lana Lane is a difficult street to navigate. It's in a, like an L shape, or a, I always say like a camel shaped street. There's two sharp corners. I live in the middle of the project, and you have to go very slow on both of these turns because of the fear of hitting somebody who's coming the other direction. There's kind of blind spots. To open it up to 59 residents' homes to come through that, and I'm really envisioning every morning when traffic is ready to go out to Branch Elementary, we're going to have a lot of issues of, you know, a lot of visibility issues. So if this project goes through, I'd like to recommend speed bumps, at least to slow down at the curves of the, on the curves. I was really surprised to see the map of the development of that size with an entrance but no exit within their own property. And I was really surprised to know that they were going to utilize other people's property to make an exit and go way out of the way, turning on Lana Lane and then on Los Olivos and then onto Cherry to get out. I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of congestion at the main entrance. People will be coming in and out of that one. So I would like to just bring up, again, I'm not an architect, I don't understand plans, but I don't understand why there can't be a street going straight out just on the, what is that, the west side of the Japanese lot, making that a thorough street. So you have kind of a horseshoe going through, and then the cross streets in the middle. Make sense? Okay. And then the last part was, I read the packet that you put online, and that there was a request to change the village residential standards for more density, putting more homes in this project than the general plan calls for. Also, the staff suggested guest parking a 1/2 space per unit, which equated to 30 street parking spots for the 59 homes. I predict an overflow into the existing neighborhoods. Listening tonight, it sounds like they're anticipating more overage parking, but it's going into where the Cherry Avenue current tenants or residents are already parking. So I think that would predict, if it was opened up into Lana Lane, more overflow traffic over there also. So I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Julie. Anyone else?
Everyone, Mayor, Council, long-time listener, first-time caller. Steve English. I live at 505 Lana Lane. My neighbors are the Japanese Welfare Association. A lot of the things that I wrote down have been said, so I'm going to try to make it kind of short. I have three items that I'd encourage the council to consider during this, and one's the scope of the plan. Second is the traffic consideration and easements. And then, most importantly, the goals of the Japanese Welfare Association. So I share a fence with them, and at one time it was half a fence, and now it's a full fence again after the arson. So that's kind of how I come into this equation. So on the scope of the plan, what I just see is that I think that the use of the specific plan, while it's a great planning tool, is that it's kind of focused on circumventing the village residential standards. And so in the Lana neighborhood, the average lot size is 6,700 square feet. In the Marsalik or the Ellsworth neighborhood above that, it's 7,200. All the adjacent properties on East Cherry are 8,000, 9,000 from what I can gather. So I just don't see the wisdom in kind of making that really dense in that spot. I would like to see more consistency between neighborhoods. I also don't really see, while I see the reason for having the interconnectivity between neighborhoods, there really isn't anything on the east side. There's a neighborhood park that's in that Ellsworth development, but it's just for residents. There's nothing in Lana Lane. So while it's nice to have communities that are flowing together, there really isn't anything to go see over on that side. On the new development, just think that the most important thing is giving the Japanese Welfare Association their ability to show their culture, to celebrate their culture amongst themselves and also to the Arroyo Grande community as a whole. So thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else who would like to come forward? Last chance. Okay, we will close public comment on this and we'll bring it back to the council. And I just want to remind the audience that this isn't a hearing on a project per se. This is what's known as pre-application. And the intent of this kind of a meeting is to essentially find out the same information that has surfaced this evening from everyone who has a stake in this. And for us to voice our views based on what we've seen thus far. And this helps the applicant figure out what they need to do when they go back to the drawing board. So this starts a process that is going to continue on for quite a while before a final project is brought back. And then, Julie, I wanted to comment on something that you mentioned. Sometimes I feel like I have to kind of come to the defense of staff here. Sometimes we will put out a press release on what we're going to be talking about, and depending on the newspaper or the reporter or who gets it, sometimes they will print half of it, sometimes they won't print any of it. So it's just a question of what happens to it after we make the release. Sometimes that happens. I'm going to jump out on this one, and there are a couple of reasons for it. Number one, I think I've got a bit of history with this piece of land, as Margaret will attest to, that goes back a few years. And I want to get back to that aspect of it in a moment, but the first thing I want to do is kind of go through the other elements of this particular plan and at least, give my views on it. In terms of the density of the track, the council these days, we find ourselves really in conflict because there are opportunities, there are limited opportunities for us to construct homes in the city. We don't have that much land left. What pushes up against some of our more traditional development practices, which is, as was mentioned, compatibility with adjacent neighborhoods, what pushes up against that is the state requirement for us to build more housing. It's called the Regional Housing Allocation Plan. That is a mandate that comes down from the state. And so we get our allocation every few years. And it's an expectation that we're going to do something with that allocation. We make it very clear that there are a number of constraints. Resources are at the top of the list, namely water, that might keep us from developing homes at a level that the state would like to see us do. But be that as it may, we still plan for taking advantage of the space that we do have to see if we can create a little more housing so that we can at least begin to satisfy some of those state mandates. So that has been with us now for probably the last 10 years, and none of us really like it that much, but it's sometimes an option that we have very little flexibility with. So that's why from time to time we will look at a project like this and say, okay, can we make it just a little bit denser and meet some of those state requirements so at least they understand we're making a good faith effort to satisfy their requirements. On this particular project, I like the architecture. I like the my option would be for the internal walking path that would include or integrate a bioswale and wider walking path. I don't like the path at the rear for all of the reasons that have been stated. I don't see any reasonable connectivity that's going to occur with that path, and I'll get to more justification. And it would seem to me that the there was some argument about the fact that there, this might encourage criminal activity. And I think there's more option for that kind of behavior if we in fact put some sort of developed pathway back there with landscaping that obscures the view from outside. Then there would, and by so doing, perhaps deal with the absence of those kinds of parks in the adjacent neighborhoods and allow more people to use it other than just this tract. In terms of the trail network, I really am kind of excited about going back to, once again, one of the issues that I brought up earlier that I discussed with Teresa, and that is getting enough people around the table to talk about perhaps some kind of a meandering rural trail network that would eventually connect with whatever is developed on the Fredericks property. If you look at what we have in along James Way, that's a rural trail that we've improved with decomposed granite, but we've maintained a lot of the natural features. That's a walking path. And also, if you look at something that's even close to what we just approved, I think, at the last meeting, funding, or at least our share of the funding for the Pismo Preserve, that's going to be a wonderful hiking feature. And we could, theoretically, create something like that here that would be, not connected as a condition of this project. It would be another project that we would work on separately. And in terms of circulation, I guess I need to make this very clear. It was some years ago that a lot of you have heard me talk about our volunteer organization called Arroyo Grande in Bloom. The very first year that we participated in the national competition, the annual symposium was held back in Rockland, Illinois. And there was a contingent of us that went back to Rockland. And on one of the tours, they showed us a Japanese garden that was amazing. It was probably one of the most beautiful spots I had ever been to. And Bob Lund, most of you know Bob Lund. Bob Lund and I took a bunch of pictures, and we came back and we said, wouldn't it be nice if we could put something like this on the property, on the Japanese welfare property? And if you, I know you remember, Margaret, and so do you, Vard. We had, the last time I saw this many people from the Japanese community was at that first meeting that we presented pictures of that garden, and it was in the community center. And I remember it very vividly because somebody had invited an architect from up north who did Japanese gardens, and the poor man got sick, and we had to call paramedics. But it was not, and it was right in the middle of my presentation. So, but I'm sharing that with you because I think historically we always envisioned something like that happening on this property. At least I did. Somewhere along the line, we didn't get much traction, and it was kind of disappointing. And we were I think Nick will tell you we were actually looking for other places where we could do some kind of a statement that would honor the Japanese history and heritage for this community. And so now I'm hearing that there's another project underway, and I'm excited about it. The reason why I'm sharing all of that with you is because, given that, there's no way I'm going to support this kind of an access across that property, not for pedestrians, not for emergency vehicles, not for vehicle access. There is too much history associated with this property, and until we can figure out a way of perhaps developing another access road, it's going to be part of this project. It's not going to be something that cuts across this piece of property as far as I'm concerned. For the points that were made a moment ago, I think Julie made them, circulation-wise, given the configuration of Lana Lane there, that's not good circulation. So if there are other options open to us that make more sense, and namely it would be this access, which I think at least I'm getting an indication that staff would might be open to it, and as your plan develops, if that's something that can be nicely added with some landscaping and be a feature that we can incorporate here as a secondary access, that's all the better. If it's not, if it won't work out, then there's another option of perhaps the border to create that secondary access. So those are my priorities, but I won't, you know, I can tell you right now I won't support a project that has this connection to it for all of the reasons that I've stated. So I like the, overall, I like the project, I like the architecture, and so we'll see what happens next. And I think we'll go down in reverse order, and I'll let Mayor Pro Tem go next.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, starting with the main issues, I do share the opinion on the trail on the back of the property here. I think I had actually wasn't familiar with the idea of going off with a trail onto the what's really a fairly steep hillside, but certainly that is a much better alternative than would be this trail that just ends. I did go out and look at this creek as well. Tell you what, when the ground's wet out there, it's not a good place to be with street shoes. But I do agree this is not what I would call a creek. I am somewhat concerned about what our expectation when we do this hydrology study, what it'll actually say about what is now expected of that area to be able to handle in the event of a major rain event. So I'm certainly in favor of the internal trail. As far as the connection across, I'm actually concerned about the emergency access. I think this property can easily provide emergency access for their out to Cherry one way or another. I do think there are issues about emergency access for whatever the Japanese Society is planning to build there, because there's going to be an emergency access issue. And once this access goes away, there's going to have to be another way to accomplish that. That's what makes it difficult to consider two plans when only one's in place. But clearly, I think this project can handle its own secondary access there. I do recognize the density is higher here than on the adjacent tract. Although I do think if you go back into the village, you'll find that there are other lots that are easily as in this size range. And I do think this is certainly the trend that as we develop other areas, the typical 7,500 square foot lot is almost non-existent anymore, and this is actually a far more common setup. The area I live is a 5,000 square foot zero lot line setup. The connection, I guess one of my concerns here is that we want to make sure that we establish is that the road that we are expecting to connect back to the Frederick property here, that somewhere we actually in our general plan, because this is nowhere, it doesn't exist anywhere today, and it couldn't because we didn't know what the plan here was, but that we get that drawn up fairly quickly. I think it may very well have to do with the, maybe it's the way that this trail is going to, maybe it's going to be this trail right of way. But I do think we want to get that established fairly quickly so that there, when we get 15 years down the road or 20 years down the road, everybody knows that was the intent. I do like the park on the corner, although I do think when we do these parks that are also drainage areas that they're, you know, that they end up being green spaces, and I don't have any real problem with that, but I do wonder how much of a real park that we can really develop here, but that'll be one of the challenges that you have. But other than that, I certainly like the architecture in this. I do like the way that it fronts onto Cherry. I understand the concern about the parking. I have the same concern about the parking. I was going to ask why staff didn't like a double-loaded road. I think it has to do with how much parking would actually be available on the other side of the road, even if they did that. But I wonder if you guys can clarify that.
Double parking on both sides of Cherry. Yeah. It has to do more with the alignment of the travel lane as you proceed east on Cherry Lane and the jog that's that is there but imperceptible now would be exaggerated if you have to move the center line over for one
twist
part.
In the road.
So that's the general.
So yeah, I do think it was natural to want to connect these. In fact, I think we saw proposals that had Lawn and Lane connecting through, and actually I think coming back out onto Cherry when you guys put together the original housing track that you proposed at one point. So I think that's why everybody naturally looks at this. It does solve three problems. It, you know, independent of the pedestrian access, the emergency access for this area, for Lana Lane, and for the Japanese Society's property, just seems like a natural fit. And I'm sure that's the reason, you know, three things come together here as well. But clearly, this is if the intent here is to develop this as a rural park-like structure, this is not going to work. So, I'm still concerned about how we're going to provide emergency access for the ultimate project that comes forward on the Japanese Society's property. But assuming we can find a way around that, I know that we can give direction tonight that you really should be looking at an alternative access out onto Cherry Lane. I think those are my comments. Thanks.
Okay, Councilmember.
This winter, we'll wait and see though. I like the fact that there are no driveways over here on Cherry. That's great. The alleyway is a great solution to that. I think the walking path through here is the way to go. I like the park over here. Coincidentally, when you do come forward with whatever project you come forward with for the Japanese Welfare Association, I think your secondary access is going to be coming in off of here. It's going to come through Lana Lane. That's where your secondary emergency access is going to come from. But that is just secondary emergency access. I don't think we need to have circulation that connects the two. Ag mitigation, I look forward to finding that in a productive manner where something is set aside somewhere else in the city, and I can live with that. I think that's it.
Okay. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As I said before, my biggest passion on this project is the ag mitigation. So I will not vote for the project if it doesn't have one-for-one mitigation within the city limits or two-to-one outside the city limits. I just won't do it. I'm still worried about drainage issues. I'm still worried and concerned about the way parking was described along Cherry. That's something doesn't sit right. I got to go through the math. It doesn't make sense. To Margaret and the rest of the community that felt like they kind of got off on the wrong foot, you clearly deserve better. We made a mistake, so I apologize for that. And as the mayor said and Joe said, I can't support anything that infringes on the Japanese property without their agreement. I find it offensive, quite honestly. So those are my comments, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. And last but certainly not least, Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The density of the project I'm okay with for other reasons council members brought up, but also because it makes it more affordable. And I think a lot of people can't live in this community, and it's a bummer. So I think that if we can make the lots a little bit smaller, the houses a little bit smaller, hopefully families can afford to live there. So that's a benefit of the density. The ag conversion absolutely has to be one-to-one mitigation within the city limits, and I'm looking to see what we're going to mitigate because, you know, we don't have a lot of ag land within the city limits, so I want to see what it is we're going to come up with and or the developer is going to come up with to put in a conservation easement, and that will make a difference. The path next to I like the other path, the interior path, the linear park. I would be in support of the creek path or the drainage swale path, but I don't know if it's going to go anywhere, and so I don't want to miss out on the opportunity for that interior linear park. So I'd prefer that. I like the architecture. The park with play equipment, I think, would be preferred. I know we have to have that for drainage. We've had complaints from people in the village that there's no place to take their kids. Nelson Green, or whatever, what's it's not Nelson Green, but I'm just going to call it that forever. What is it?
Heritage Square.
That's nice to throw the ball and the frisbee for the dog, but there's no play equipment, and there are a lot of families that live in the village. So I'd very much like to, if we're going to get a park there, to have just some minimal equipment there for someone to play on, because this won't just be for this development. Anybody's going to be able to use it, so that's a benefit to the whole village. I appreciate the 6-foot parkway. We don't often see those, and if you go into other cities, I think that they really make a project look a lot nicer. And then it also kills two birds with one stone, because you have the bioswales, and so it takes care of the drainage that we need to provide for on site. The 25-foot creek setback, you know, I obviously will be looking at the hydrology study to see how much is coming off the hillside, how much is not coming from anywhere else. And I had a follow-up question, Teresa. Did you say on that last lot in the Coker's track, we did hold them to the 25-foot creek setback, or we didn't?
I think there was maybe a few feet of deviation, but generally, yes.
And then, obviously, those other developments, as you stated, Lana Lane and the older houses in the Ellsworth track, those aren't, because those were before we did the whole creek setback policy.
That's correct.
Okay. So I think the creek setback will depend on what we find out with the drainage, that we have to sort of make sure that we don't have flooding in those backyards. the guest parking on the street, I just think that's going to be a natural place for people to painting them, unless it's all new housing tracts where nobody's lived in them yet, and then we just sort of mandate they go in. The point being is that it's not necessarily to go somewhere in particular. It's just to exercise, walk your dog, have a safe place for your kids to kind of toddle in front of you, and it's just meandering. Instead of having to go out on Cherry Lane, I don't think I would necessarily see it as a way to get anywhere, like to the village or a park. I would just see it as a safe way to go someplace else for exercise. And then the... As Jim stated, I think that this emergency access, in a perfect world, if everyone was okay with it, it satisfies all those three neighborhoods. I mean, it satisfies the new development, it satisfies the Japanese welfare's property for emergency access, which they need to have, and it satisfies Lana Lane's emergency access as well. Is it a perfect emergency access? No. I think that we all know that, but I think when you're looking at all three areas, it sort of takes care of all of them. So I'm okay with not having a road through there. I do think that Lana Lane does need an emergency access because of how long it is, staff stated. I do know the Japanese welfare property needs an emergency access, and I know this property does. So if we can all get on board with something else that's not quite there, and that's something that's up towards the front of the property, that's okay with me, but we're going to have it somewhere. And then I am disappointed, as I'm always disappointed, that we can't have pedestrian access through properties. I understand the cars, but I think people traversing through neighborhoods, and I'm not sure what the plan is for the Japanese welfare property. And so that I can't really speak too much about it, but I just think it's sort of a nice thing for communities to be more walkable. And we have a lot of closed off neighborhoods, and we keep closing them off. So anyway, those are my comments. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Randy, did we address your issues? Did you get enough?
We got all we needed.
Okay. All right. And Margaret, any questions from you? Okay. All right. I want to thank all of you for taking time to come out and voice your opinions. It's what it's all about. Thank you for participating. And we'll conclude this item.
access Long Lane. That doesn't do anything for Long Lane unless they run something all the way up to the front. So in reality, I'll be very supportive. I think that welfare society.
Folks, I'm going to have to ask if you could please. We have other items to get to. So if you could celebrate outside, and that would be a good thing. Okay, we're going to move along to item 12, council communication. Let me ask the council, any observations, comments? Okay.
Just briefly, I went to a memorial on Saturday, and the code enforcement took a directional sign that was on a sawhorse next to the Portugie Hall. So I went to the police department to kind of register a concern, and the gentleman that I talked to, the watch commander, said they would hopefully talk to code enforcement about at least asking somebody higher up the food chain before they took a sign like that down, because it's not a garage sale sign. It's an unusual kind of event issue. So I'm hoping Steve or someone can follow up on that, because poor Steve lost his wife, and when he came around that corner and that sign was gone, that was all it needed to set him off, and it didn't make for a good afternoon, so.
Where exactly was the sign again?
The sign was on a sawhorse next to the Portugie.
That too, don't you, Krista?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yep. Take a look at it. I think it was in today's or yesterday's.
Okay.
You'll see an article there on the Uber.
Uber, okay.
Yeah. The only comment that I wanted to make is to let you know that next Sunday and Monday and Tuesday, we will have judges from America and Bloom visiting our city once again, and we're actually going to have the Avila trolley that will be in town. They're going to pick up right out in front of the council chambers here, and that's going to be our tour vehicle. And so there'll be a contingent from the city as well as Rio Grande and Bloom. I don't know yet, but I think Jeff English may go along on that tour, and I may go along on part of it. But they'll be with us for 3 days, and we're going to show them our best side and hope for the best. Okay, staff communication, anything?
Community Development Director has one announcement to make.
Yes, I was asked to by staff at SLOCOG and the team for the U.S. 101 Corridor Mobility Master Plan. You had a presentation a couple meetings ago. The final public workshop for that project is tomorrow, July 9th, from 5 to 7:30 at SLO Vets Hall and on Grand Avenue in San Luis Obispo. It's the final workshop, so they just wanted to plug it one more time. As you heard, the segment with Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach and up to Avila is one of the focus segments of that plan. And so they're looking at things like prioritizing projects such as widening auxiliary lanes and some of the particular projects that communities are interested in along the main line. So that meeting is tomorrow from 5 to 7:30.
Okay, thank you. We'll move to item 14. This is our final community comments and suggestions. So once again, I'll ask the public, anyone would like to come up and comment on an item, whether it's on the agenda or not? Anyone? Okay. We'll close our final community comments and suggestions, and that will take us to item 15, which is closed session. And prior to adjourning to closed session, once again, we like to ask the public if they have anything to add to any of our closed session items. All right. And then we will also remind the public that if there is anything reportable out of closed session, that report will be given at the next scheduled council meeting. We will not reconvene here this evening. So at this time, the council will adjourn to closed session.